Africa.
Morning, Shane. How are you?
Good morning, Bernard. It's a DM. Thank you very much. You are most welcome to the Standing Committee Appropriation Committee meeting. As you can see, we have Department of Human Settlements and then Department of Water and Sanitation who are going to engage with the committee this morning as part of the Adjustment Appropriations Bill. So we remember that the Minister of Finance, amongst the bills that he presented to Parliament during MTDS was the Adjustment Appropriations Bill. So we then requested these two departments to interact with their good sense and with the public. So Minister Kubai, most welcome. DM, I take it, Mashobo, you are leading the delegation from Water and Sanitation. Am I right?
Yes, Shane, I'm leading the delegation. Thank you.
Thank you. You are most welcome. But before we proceed with the departments, can I check, do you have any apologies?
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members and guests. We received two apologies from Mr. Kwankwa and Mr. Sarupin. Furthermore, we received an apology from the Minister of Water and Sanitation, who is attending the Portfolio Committee on Water and Sanitation's meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Let's accept and note the apologies.
And sorry, Chair.
Hi.
I've raised my hand. Yeah, thank you very much for that. I'm attending the parliamentary session. The sitting is starting at 10 in any event. So I'm going to be juggling. But my apologies for that, Chairperson.
Yeah, we know you are very good at multitasking, Honorable Sheikh Imam. We'll note that as long as we also have got half of you in the meeting. We appreciate that. Right. I think what we'll do, Minister DM, we'll start with Water and Sanitation and have your presentation. And then after that, ask the Minister Kubai, Human Settlements, to also come up with their presentation. We have decided. Chairperson. Yes.
Sorry for interrupting you so rudely. Chair, the Department of Water and Sanitation did request that we should start with human settlements.
Oh, okay.
I did send to that request, Chair.
Yeah, okay. No, that's fine. Honorable Minister, human settlements will start with you and your department, make a presentation, and after that, therein, do then engage with the human settlements before we allow Water and Sanitation. I think we should do that because that's the request which was made because they have got another engagement. So, DM, Minister, we'll allow you to come in with your presentation, and then after that, I'll allow members to ask questions. DM will only come to you, apologies for that, once we are done with a human settlement because they indicated that they have got another engagement. Okay, can we leave with that?
It's a great future.
Thank you so much, DM. Honorable Minister, please, you are most welcome. Thank you.
Good morning to you, Chairperson. Good morning, DM Mashobo. Good morning, members of the Standing Committee on Finance, on Appropriation. Chair, we are presenting. Thank you for inviting us. I'm going to highlight just a few things and then the team will go into the detail. I do have an apology of my ex-MPP who is not well, and I've released her because she's been booked off sick. She's got her voice is gone as well. But just to say, Chair, when dealing with the issues of the budget cuts, I think there are just few things I want to highlight. The first one is around the ceiling, cost of in terms of COE ceiling. Most of the time when we appear before Parliament, we are lambasted or we are told not to utilize consultants more, and therefore the need for us to be able to build internal capacity. And the cutting on COE is one of those that is dire in terms of, I think, we speak for ourselves as human settlements, but I do believe it will be across. When you have a department that is technical as ours, you require quality, you require technical skills, that you hardly able to, not able to acquire because you've reached your ceiling and you cannot be able to employ more your planners and your engineers. And one of the requests that we have made even for public service administration to amend regulations was to allow at least not 1 year contract but 3 year contracts. This was done through cabinet processes as part of their review of the administrative processes. Because this will allow us to have the internal capacity. For example, we have where we look at performance of municipalities and we feel that you need to go and intervene. Now, when you do not have enough capacity, you take people from the department, then you close the gap for functioning instead of intervening. Then you go and then start wanting people. No one wants to contract with you for a year to help you in stabilizing municipalities and being able to. So we saw the fruits of our intervention, for example, in Nelson Mandela Bay when we went in, supported the municipality and performance started to improve. When we look at the performance currently, we are seeing that there is a need for us to intervene again across municipalities, because municipalities would have lost capacity in 2021 after the elections, and therefore even training and ensuring that they understand what needs to be done and supported by the administration. So we are unable to do that because of the work that we are currently held for. So that's one of the issues that I'm just flagging in terms of the start and putting on ceiling, especially on cost of employees. And we need to be creative, and we've been saying there is a need for creativity between Treasury and BSA in us supporting the department. Chairperson, I'm one that would be upfront about the portfolio having not performed well over yet. For example, we see retaining of money to Treasury in terms of budget. And when we look at the cards, what we do annually, we look at whether the provinces and municipalities will be able to spend. So we have a midterm review that we all go through. We then go through with MINEC to say this province, for example, is sitting at this percentage of performance in this financial year. We are left with 6 months or 3 months or 4 months towards the end of the financial year. What is the possibility of us being able to spend, but spend in quality spending? And then we start saying, okay, the process is for us to ensure that we don't lose the money within the sector. And then we would be able to redirect money from one province, for example, to the other, where there's a province that has shortfall. If you look currently, for example, we're dealing with issues of Limpopo and Mpumalanga and Northern Cape, where, for example, in terms of the interventions that we've done in Limpopo are starting to show good, and their performance has moved up. And therefore, with currently, they're going to have a gap or have to solve the rates that they're moving if we're not able to redirect money from non-performing provinces to them. So we're still able to deliver houses holistically and deliver our services and products holistically in the province, where in the country, when we move money around within the sector and within the portfolio. What we feel as a most unfortunate part is when the money goes to the revenue. One of my issues that I have an issue with Treasury is where we would go into an area, analyze, check, and say this is what we believe that should be done in that particular municipality or province. But Treasury would defy us or do contrary to what we have said. An example is in Malawi. We understood that we are going to lose the money as a sector. It will not be rolled over. And then we wanted to utilize the money somewhere else, which would have assisted, for example, wanted to redirect the money into the 16 informal settlements that did not have basic services in Western Cape and expand on the services and also into other performing projects. They refused, they directed the money, and we knew that where they were directing money to, it was not going to be utilized, and we have lost the money now in the Mangaung Metro. So we do have instances where we differ with Treasury in how they do, and we've requested a review of our grant system so that there is tighter control. But also from our side, we do believe that the conditions of the grant and how we are implementing the grant system does allow us to perform better. The other area that, because we are doing, as I said, the other area that we are continuing on is what we are doing in terms of the work we are doing on policy review, which will result in us being able to shift some of how we do things. Because that's what they said to us, go change your policy so that you can change how we do. The current system of business plans by provinces, and then they have an APP. So a province will have a business plan that they submit to the minister, we sign it off and say this is what is going to be implemented. But the tool for parliament in legislatures will be APP. So the monitoring, there are two tools that are being utilized, which we do believe that distract provinces and it creates a lot of administrative work. So with the review of the policy 2023, white with paper, policy 2023 that we are currently in consultation with, we are hoping to start implementing it in the 1st of April 2024, and also the request to the team so that we can review the business model. We've asked our technical roommate to look at it so that we can respond better and have tools that can assist us. So I thought those things should give you a framework of the context we operate at as human settlement and some of the weaknesses that we've been able to identify and what we are going to do about it as the team and as the sector and from our side as minister and leader in terms of where we've identified gaps and performance areas. I'll hand over to my CFO because it's more financial issues, Lucy Bella, who leads in terms of the presentation. I'm joined by both herself and Corporate Services DDG, who will be part of the discussion. We felt that these are the two key people who assist us in making sure that we are able to provide the necessary explanations and what is happening. Chair, through you, I'll hand over to Lucy Bella to present.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Let me show face just to introduce myself. Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Minister, Deputy Minister, members of the committee, colleagues, good morning. I will be taking the committee through the presentation from Human Settlement. I don't know who's sharing. Maybe I should share from my side.
Erin?
Is there somebody sharing the screen presentation?
I
will share.
Yes, correct.
Thanks, Zoe. So, Honourable Chairperson and members of the committee, basically what we did, we looked at the letter and then we tried to align our presentation based on what the content of the letter was saying. But our presentation, we are looking at the impact of the, does this budget mean for us as a human settlement of not achieving our policy and our program objectives? And we are aware of what has been announced, the 3.2 billion, that is going to have an overall negative impact on our targeted output on the various human settlement programs, because beginning of the year, we had the national plan that was approved and it was submitted to National Treasury, but because of the 3.2 billion reduction, we had to revisit that. And then at the end, we'll be also looking at the ultimate, when it comes to the ability of the government to effectively respond. Because as a human settlement, we are more service delivery driven. So our service delivery priorities are negatively impacted, and as well as the 11,478 housing projects given the quantum. This will be taken into account on the budget reduction, because what we included on the subsidy quantum, it was also, we are taking into account a new item that, because we know of what has been happening in the country, that all our subsidy houses that we bring, they need to be inclusive of a solar. So given the budget cut, we are going to forfeit 11,478 new housing opportunities that we're going to be delivered this year. So this is the appropriation and the budget structure of the Department of Human Settlements, and the cut, it's cut across all the programs. So our provisional conditional grants, they are cut by 2.1 billion, which constitute 11.3%. And then our local government, which is the grants that we transfer to our metropolitan municipalities, it has been cut by 6.54%. And the departmental operational grant is 160, and included in the departmental operational grant is the transfer to our entities. So the below portion is itself the five programs. Administration has been cut by 15 million. However, program two is where our biggest grants are sitting. The Human Settlement Development Grant and the Urban Settlement Development Grant has the 2.3 billion cut. Then the informal settlement is where both our two informal settlement upgrading partnership grants reside in program three, has been cut by 828. The rental and social housing was cut by 47 million, and then the affordable housing was cut by 26. So this constitutes the 3.2. The next slide is going to give us the details. So I'm going to start with the one grant. And I've looked at the research paper. As I'm presenting, I'll be responding to some of the questions that are on the research paper that has been put on the invite. So on the Human Settlement Development Grant, this is the grant that we are transferring to the provinces. So we were requested by National Treasury that we need to cut it by 1.7 billion. So what we did, we had a meeting around September. We looked at the performance because we did not want to use one size fits all. Our criteria that we used for the cut was to look, it was performance-based. So what we did, we looked at the performance of the provinces for the 6 months. So all the provinces that were sitting below 40%, they are the ones that were impacted by the cut, and all the provinces that were sitting above 50%, as of the 30th of September, they were not cut. Because when you look at Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and Northern Cape, we did not cut because at that particular point in time, we can see that even now, Limpopo province, they are spending their grant. As we speak now, they are sitting at 95%. So they are left with 5 months, sorry, with 5% to expend until end of the financial year. When we look at Limpopo, at Mpumalanga province, they are sitting at 67%. When we look at Northern Cape, they are sitting at 83%. So if we have used a one-size-fits-all cut of the 1.7 billion, it was going to affect these provinces negatively. So what Minbeck decided and what the executive authority decided was, instead of using, let's look at the performance base. So Eastern Cape, Free State, Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, and Western Cape, they are the ones that had to share the 1.7 billion. However, Free State province, because you can see that at that particular point in time, Free State was sitting at 25%. And it was below because 25% is as of October. But at that particular point in time in September, they were sitting below the 25%. So that's why the impact of the cut is more on the Free State. However, all the other provinces, the cut was equivalent to the allocation formula that we are using. So for Eastern Cape, Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, and West, Northwest and Western Cape provinces, when we effected the cut, we used the allocation formula that we are using when we are doing the allocation on the grant. Can you go to the next slide? So after we have effected the cut, we went a step further to request all the provinces to submit the revised plan because we wanted to see that basically what we are sitting with and the impact of the cut. So from the initial plan, all of the provinces jointly, including amongst all the other programs, we are looking at the servicing of the site and the housing unit. So when you look at the national, the provinces before the cut, they were going to deliver 24,378 service sites and the housing units were 8,893. But because of the two cuts that we had to effect on the four conditional grants, the service site has reduced by 2,769 and the housing unit as well. They're going to reduce by 10,164. So what we are putting on the table is, before then, we're going to deliver more. But now, 10,154 vulnerable residents will go without houses for this financial year. And 2,769 sites, they won't be delivered from the human settlement perspective. Next slide. So one of our MCSF targets is to do the investment in the development areas, which we call the priority housing and human settlement development areas. So basically, when we approve the business plan, because we believe that these are the areas that we need to start investing more, we looked at how much initially we have invested, because this is our first 5-year target. And then the negative, because 1.4 billion is going to be reduced on the investment from our priority housing development areas. So all the provinces, they had to go back and look at what they said they're going to invest in all those areas. However, they need to reduce so that we are able to take the cut into consideration. The next slide. The next grant that we are transferring to the provinces is called the Informal Settlements Upgrading Partnership Grant. And this one as well, National Treasury gave us 476.7 million that we need to cut. When we looked at the performance as well, because we made a decision that we are not going to do a one-size-fits-all, we are going to do a performance base. When we look at the performance as of September, the only province that was doing very well when it comes to this grant was the Northern Cape. So we can see that on the column that is written budget cut, Northern Cape is not impacted, whereas the 4.76 was shared equally because all of them, they were not doing very well when it comes to the informal settlements upgrade to partnership grant. When we go to the last column where we are putting the percentage spent against the total available, we are able to even pick up that the only province that is doing very well is Northern Cape, that is at 95%. So it means that if we had to reduce them by that, they were not going to be able to have money until the end of the financial year. However, the other provinces that are improving when it comes to the informal settlement is the one that is highlighted in green, which is the Northwest, and the one that is picking up is the Mpumalanga province, whereas all the other provinces are sitting on red. Yes, we are concerned. What we did immediately when we picked up that the performance was not satisfactory, we requested all these provinces to submit their recovery plans. Last week, we were with them at the MINIMAC, whereby we presented the recovery plan, and then we requested that the Honorable Minister, together with the MECs, they're going to have the bilaterals to really look at the performance, especially when it comes to this grant, because what we are taking forward is we have already lost 3.2 billion. We don't want to see the money going back to the fiscal. So the recovery plans will be able to assist us to make decisions on what to move on, especially when it comes to the matters of the underperformance when it comes to the specific grant. When we look at the service delivery impact, because one of the things that the informal settlement upgrading partnership grant is assisting us with is the servicing of sites. Because when they go in an informal settlement, they either do in-situ upgrading, whereby they will be able to deliver the site. So when we look at the impact of the loss, all the provinces, they highlighted that they won't be able to assist us with 2002. So the service sites that we were expecting to go in those informal settlements to service the site so that we are able to put people in a formalized area, we are going to lose 2002 of the sites that we are going to deliver. The next slide. The other thing that as human settlements, we are delivering on our grants is the social and economic amenities. So because now we are not doing only housing, we are doing human settlements. Hence, we said to the provinces and the metros, if they can go back and look at the impact, especially when it comes to the social and economic amenities, then we are able to see that 21 million as well has been invested in such, and the provinces that had planned to deliver more on the social and economic amenities, which is the Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and Mpumalanga provinces, and all of them, they had to go back and cut. So the impact when it comes to the social and economic amenities is 21 million. The next slide. We went a step further because, as I indicated earlier on, was that the cut was not only for provinces on the constitutional grant. There was also a cut on our entities. Social housing is one of our entities that's dealing with social housing, and then they were impacted by the cut as well because they are a CCG. The grant for them was also cut by 25 million. They indicated that the reduction in that cut is going to translate in a reduction of social housing units, and as well on the new approvals, because the cut also is going to approve the baseline that we're going to start with on the financial year. Then we went a step further, we went to the National Housing Finance Corporation. This is the entity that is assisting us with the post-home finance. That this is the middle class, the ones that they don't qualify for a free house, however, they're too rich to get a bond from the bank. This is the middle class that we are assisting. 25 million, we had to cut them as well. And they have indicated that this cut is going to affect us because it's going to affect even the average of the amount that we are giving per the quantum when it comes to that subsidy. The next slide. So this slide is giving the impact of the cut. The CRUs are the community residential units that we are building and the first home finance. So this one is giving us the numbers. So when we went back to the USDG, the team, when they looked at the revised plan, they were able to pick up that we are going to forfeit certain units on the community residential units, and then we are going to also as well forfeit the certain units when it comes to the first home finance, because certain provinces, they do implement the first home finance within their own IRCP program, and then we are going to forfeit 2,230 units. The biggest contributor in that one is Western Cape with the 1,934, because they had to cut everything that they were doing when it comes to the first home finance. And when it comes to the community residential units, the Free State Province together with the KwaZulu-Natal are the ones that are going to suffer because they had to slow down on those projects that they were implementing in those communities. The next slide.
What type of affairs is that one, please?
The next entity that is affected is the CISO, the Community Schemes Ombuds Services. This one, it was reduced by 4.9 million. And
CFO?
Yes.
My apologies, can I interrupt you?
Okay,
can I request everybody on the platform to mute and allow the CFO to make a presentation? Please, could you continue?
Thank you, Chairperson. The challenge that the Community Schemes Ombudsman is sitting with here is they were receiving 24.9 million from the fiscal. So we had to take it back as part of the budget cut. But 2 weeks ago, we received a letter from National Treasury that they need even to surrender their surplus. So if National Treasury proceeds with the surrendering of the surplus from the CISOs, it means that this is going to have a negative impact on the business of the CISO. Because they surrendered the 24.9 million, hoping that National Treasury would allow them to keep the surplus. So these are some of the discussions that we are having with National Treasury. We had a meeting with them last week so that we can request them to reconsider. Because we have already taken 24.9 million, we requested National Treasury to reconsider taking even the surplus. Because when they take the surplus, it means it's going to be closed shop for one of our entities. And this entity is the one that we are thinking that by now it's self-sustainable. Next slide. On the letter, we were requested to, in brief, to provide the performance of the Urban Settlement Development Grant. So this is the performance of the Urban Settlement Development Grant. This is the grant that we are transferring to the metropolitan municipalities. It's a Schedule 4, which is supplementing the capital revenues of the grant. However, this grant as well was impacted by the cut, because the cut was 553 million. As what we did on the provinces side, we had to do it as well on the metros. We looked at the prior performance, because this was only on the first quarter, because the financial years of the metropolitan municipalities start on July. So by the time we received the letter for the cut, they were already in their first quarter. So what we did, we looked at the prior year performance. When we look at the prior year performance of the metropolitan municipalities, when it comes to both the grants, Buffalo City is the one that performed very well on both sides, the financial and the non-financial. Hence, we did not cut the Buffalo City. However, all the other metros, they were impacted by the cut, equally as per the allocation formula that we are using for allocation.
One rent. That's one.
Can you please switch off your music and allow us to continue the presentation? Please. Okay, please proceed.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
So when we look at the performance of the municipalities, this is month 4. October is their on the fourth month, and we can see that Buffalo City was already sitting at 25.9%, and then Etobicoke is sitting at 26. However, all the other metros are sitting below 20%, and we have highlighted them in yellow, We had a lengthy discussion at our MINMEC. We agreed that we will wait because what the Metro said, they said that they have just started the year, they have just closed, they are still busy with their audit. We should give the month of November. So we agreed with them. We are giving them the month of November to improve on their performance. And after the month of November, we will be able to come back and look at the performance, start with the recovery plan, because we don't want to be losing money after losing the 553 million. The next slide. Chairperson, the next few slides is giving us the non-financial information that we are getting from our metropolitan municipalities. So on the performance for the 4 months under review, we are able to see that on their own, the metros are also doing the servicing of the site and then as well as the title deeds. You can go on the next slide. The next slide, Chairperson, is giving us the number of the new water connections that the metros are using the USDG on. We can see that Nelson Mandela Bay, they've done 435, and to Australia as well is sitting at 200. And then the other, the below portion is giving us the non-financial information when it comes to the number of the dwellings provided with the connection to the electricity supply. Because as I said earlier on when I started with the USDG, that it is a supplemental grant, it supplements the capital revenue, especially the bulk, and then we are able to see the connections, especially that is going to the informal settlement. The next slide. Next. This is a non-financial information as well. So the next grant that we are transferring to the metropolitan municipalities is the informal settlement upgrading partnership grant. However, this is the Schedule 5 as well. The constitutional grant is the Schedule 5. And like the other grants, the other three grants I've spoken to, Chairperson, they were a cut. But what we did when it comes to this grant as well, the same as what we did with the USDG, we looked at the performance because performance did. We looked at the prior year performance, and Buffalo City is the one metro that performs very well when it comes to the informal settlements upgrading partnership grant, because Treasury wanted us to cut the grant with the 306 million. However, we did not effect a cut on the Buffalo City, but all the other 306 million was shared, was cut equally as per their allocation formula to all of the metros affected. Hence the cut is cut across. And then at the next slide we are looking at the performance, because we're requested to show the performance of the of these grants that are transferred to the provinces. We can see that most of them are highlighted as red, whereas there are two, which is Etegwini and Cape Town, that are sitting as green. And then the other ones, 10% that are highlighted as red, we agreed with them that they will be submitting the plans to tell us what are the improvement measures that are going to do, because we've already lost funds. We don't want us sitting back with unspent money that will be back to the revenue fund. So for the next 3 months, this is basically that we'll be doing together with the metropolitan municipalities to ensure that we safeguard the gas, nothing to, we safeguard the funds, and then nothing should be back to the revenue fund. The next slide. So this is the last, this slide is showing us what the metros are doing in their space, in the informal settlement, in their space. So this is giving us the deliverables when it comes to the servicing of sites within the metropolitan space. The only metro that has recorded that they've already serviced the site in their informal settlement is Etegwini. However, all the other metros, they have shown, because we have put separate phases. There is phase one, phase two, phase three within our informal settlement upgrading program. So the metros have submitted the business plan. Then they told us what is it that they will be doing within their space, within the informal settlement. And then we are looking at the performance based on what they had submitted, because they as well had to submit a revised plan, taking into account the budget cut. The next slide. Chairperson, this slide is giving us the MTSF implications, because we know that basically we had a number that we were working with, and when we came up with our MTSF target, we never know that we'll be sitting around here at this point in time whereby 3.2 billion would have gone back to the fiscal. So this slide is giving us the shortfall that we will be sitting with when it comes to all our MTSF targets. We've got the number of the PNG houses, the servicing of sites, the households that receive financial assistance, and the units through FS Home Finance. I spoke about it as well. And then the residential units, especially the one in the PDAs, I've spoken about the impact when it comes to our priority development areas. I've also spoken about our community residential units and the title deeds as well. So this slide is what I've spoken to earlier on, but now it's giving us the overall impact when it comes to our meeting of our five-year MTS. The next slide. Chairperson, the budget cuts, they have a major detrimental impact when it comes to the residents of this country, especially the most vulnerable, because what we are doing for the most vulnerable, and that was that are feeling the heat. The realization and the consolidation and the special change will be impacted by spending less, because what we thought we will do, we were looking at the priority development areas, because those are our economic assets. But with the reduction of the
I also hope to be Mr. But
you
can't say what's the
answer. Darren, can you please mute whoever is talking and not supposed to be talking? Can you please mute from your side? Thank you.
Chairperson, point 3 and point 4 is what the minister has spoken about it. I won't go back into that. Let's go to the next slide. The next slide will put that to talk about the current policy interventions that we are doing. Chairperson, beginning of this financial year, we have revised our subsidy quantum because the service providers and the developers, they were complaining about the quantum that we had. We have increased it by 39.7%, and there are certain items, as we said earlier on, the solar, that we are now including the solar when it comes to our subsidy housing. And then what we did as a department as well, we've done the allocation form policy. Because what we have been saying as human settlement, we said we needed to start prioritizing the most vulnerable. We need to start prioritizing the elderly. So we have that allocation formula that is on draft and it's on different structures. And then that allocation formula is prioritizing the most vulnerable group. Chair, we have approved the norms and standards for the ICT. We know that every time when we go, the brick and water is now an old model that we've been doing. There's a new model that they call the IPT, and we are told that with this new innovative building technology, you can build a house in 2 days. And then this is what we are approving as human settlement, because we want to chip into that space. If it will help us to build a house in 2 days, we have approved the norms and standards so that we can proceed and stop with the old way of doing business. We have also looked at the special housing needs policy that has been approved, and then we are working with this one together with the Department of Social Development. And as well, as I said earlier on, Chairperson, that we know that building houses is not sustainable. We are looking at the affordable rental program. The community residential units are the ones that I've spoken about them. And then the community residential units are those old, we used to call them hostels. But now they are no longer hostels, they are now a community, because we are making them as a community space whereby a whole family can stay in that. But they are more in the affordable rental program, because most people, they come to town or they come to urban settlements, urban spaces, they don't look for houses. They look for a place to stay and rent. Hence we are looking and partaking on that, together with the social housing and the first home finance. I was speaking about it, which was called FLIS. We are promoting ownership through that. And we know that informal settlement is a challenge, especially in our urban areas. And we are looking at that, and we are prioritizing. Hence, we have got two grants that are specially dealing with the informal settlement. So these grants are dealing in the non-urban areas, and we are also dealing with the informal settlements in the urban areas. And on the conclusion, Chairperson, we are, as a department, busy with revising our white paper, and it's also on the different structures for approval, and we are hoping that it is going to translate into human settlements. Chairperson, having said that, I think come to the end of the submission. Thank you so much.
CFO, thank you very much for that presentation. Honorable Minister, thank you for the presentation. Honorable members, you know how we do it. Let me get indications of people who would like to have to ask questions or comment on the presentation. Honorable members. Honorable Mlenzana.
person. Sheikh Imam, I've got my hand up, Chair.
Yes, I recognize the Honorable Sheikh, Honorable Matafa. I'm listening.
Kaiso.
Honorable Kaiso. Any other honorable member? Honorable members, I'll allow you to come in and please manage your time. We still have got a presentation from Deputy Minister Mashobo. I won't limit you. I know we can manage ourselves by now. Honorable Sheikh Imam, please come in.
Sir, did you know to blend on?
Yes, I
thank
did.
You.
I did, Honorable Sheikh. You are coming in after.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just stopped one side to pose one or two very quick questions, but thank you for the opportunity. Now, I think my question, the first one to the department, is municipalities, local government particularly, are not able to meet the requirements. They're not able to deliver on time. Now, I remember at one stage when we were raising it, and we said, should we not, instead of building houses, should we not consider just providing service sites? And through a state bank, which we then created, the Human Settlement Development Bank, provide funding or get outside investment to provide funding for these houses, so that will, provide a lot more housing opportunities, but also boost economic growth. Can you imagine the activity, economic activity, if we had to do that? Could you perhaps tell us how far and how successful, and what are the challenges you're experiencing in being able to implement this? And I know when I spoke to the former minister once, she said the idea is brilliant, but you're having difficulty with the municipalities to provide service sites. So if you can tell us what the situation is there. That's the first question. The second thing is this. We know we've got a population increase of South Africa of over 1 million every year. Unemployment is sitting at over 42%, in my understanding. So almost 80% of these people are going to, at some stage, look for housing or assisted housing through government. Do you think we're going to be able to sustain this in the longer run, or should we look at alternatives? The other problem we have is, and in the Western Cape, I've got a lot of complaints, and I see that they've also been underspending. Not surprised, but the question that people are asking me is they appear to be on the waiting list, even for this FLIPS housing initiative, and only to find suddenly there are people that are jumping the queues. What measures can you put from a national perspective to ensure there's compliance and first come first? Then my very important question is, when you're providing, I'm going to leave this as the last one, Chairperson, for now. The very important question is, you're providing houses, RDP houses and things to people. There is no mechanism to be able to ensure that these homes remain in the hands of that family. Now, because people are vulnerable, they don't have jobs, people are selling these houses for 10,000, 20,000, 40,000, going back into the informal sector, and then applying for houses to other members and things. What measures have you put, we've raised this before, to try and stop that, so that when you provide a housing, an RDP house or whatever government house, it should never be sold. It must rather move from one member of the family to the other, or return to the state so that you can give it to somebody who's more deserving. Because there are many people that have got these homes that are renting these homes out. Well, there's so many other people that don't have houses. So I'll stop there, Chair. If you could just assist us with that, I'll appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Sheikh. Honorable Lenzana, please come in. You see, I didn't forget you.
No. Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, two things. One, my voice is not the voice you know. I think I caught fever. Durban was too hot for me over the weekend. And secondly, position where I am is not very good that I can show a video. please pardon me. Can I continue?
Please, please proceed. Linda.
No, thanks. It's just two things. One, the person goes to both the Rishi and the minister on lamenting on what refers to as reprivatization. I hear them talking of cuts. I refer to reprivatization. Now, there are non-expenditure, which is tabled here, where you see that, for instance, according to the department, the best, if you are talking of in terms of expenditure, when you're referring to just the metals, would be at 26-27%, others are below. Now, don't you think moving around unspent funds is correct when we all understand the burden that this country has in terms of a huge debt that has to be serviced? I'm taking this literal check. That when you borrowed money and you see your own child for whom you have borrowed this particular money, not you, and the brother or sister of the same child who's not using the money, is actually coming in asking for money, what would you do? Would you go borrow again, or would you not move around this money which you had allocated to this one, who has now no capacity to stand? I'm literally saying this is about the trying of cutting or reprivatization versus non-expenditure. Then the last one, check on me. Also, the minister has raised a justification of relying on consultants. Now, my question here, Chair, which immediately struck my mind, was that does this mean the reference to a ceiling? Does reference to a ceiling mean that the organizational structure of the Department Human Settlement is designed for coordinating monitoring, not action-oriented? Because I would understand that what the minister is saying, the department has reached the ceiling, it actually means then that there are no vacant all posts are filled, then there is still a shortage of capacity to go down for implementation and monitoring of such at the ground level. It's only those two chapters. Otherwise, I'm very, thankful for the presentation, very clear and loud and taking us somewhere. I welcome the presentation. Thank you, Chairperson.
Harold Lenzana, thank you very much. Harold Matafa, please come in.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning to your good self, the Minister of Human Settlements, and the Deputy Ministers from Water and Sanitation on the platform and their team. Chair, let me join Honorable Mlenzana in appreciating the clarity that the presentation presents to the committee. It really assists in us reflecting on this particular reprioritization effort. Having said that, Chair, let me start first by saying we agree with the department that a reduction of 3.2 billion is a huge deal and will have some negative impact on the programs that are planned. And we fully support the approach that they did not just indiscriminately cut across their programs, but they applied a rational way they looked at performance-based reductions. So for that, we support the approach by the department. Having said that, Chair, let me raise a question that should we be faced with a similar situation in the future? Given the impact that we have identified on service delivery, are there any other recommendations that the department will make in order to mitigate the particular impact that such a move will have? Reduction or reprioritization due to fiscal discipline efforts? That will be the first one, Chair. The second one is that, from my understanding, whenever you speak of human settlement, there is a collaboration between the Department of Human Settlement and the Department of Water and Sanitation. I am happy that they are on the platform. Is there collaboration between the two departments in terms of looking at this cut to say that we are reprioritizing here, this is how it will impact you in terms of our collaborated efforts previously, and maybe we are asking you to follow suit. So I just wanted to find out if whether is there a collaboration in that regard. And I'm speaking in terms of looking at programs like eradication of bucket toilets, regional bulk infrastructure, and upgrading of informal settlements. From where I'm sitting, I think both departments, under normal circumstances, will collaborate when you speak of such programs. Chair, the last one, I think, related to what Honorable Sheikh has asked in terms of jumping the queue, but this one is on illegal occupation of completed housing units. The first units that come to mind, I know, are the provincial competency, particularly in housing. But I suspect the situation of things across the country, where when units are completed, not allocated fast enough, illegals come in and invade that particular space. Can I ask what is the view of the department? Is there any assistance that they are maybe looking at providing the provinces? Or if they have their own units that have been occupied illegally, how are they planning to resolve this issue? Because for us, Chair, in our constituencies, this has not only interfered with the waiting list, but it has also caused frictions and conflict within our communities. And I think that maybe as a committee, we'll appreciate it if the department can just share with us their opinion and if there's any effort to try and mitigate the negative impact of such tendencies by our people. Chair, once again, thank you for the brilliant presentation. We really appreciate the information that it provides. And I apologize for the space. I'm sitting outside because of the connectivity current where I'm speaking. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Oral Matafa. The bridge sound is quite soothing. Thank you. Honorable Kaiso, please come in.
Thank you very much, Chair, and the that are singing outside. Thank you very much.
If Honorable Kaiso, maybe can speak of it, so we can hear it.
Yeah. I wanted to do that, Honorable Minister. Honorable Kaiso.
Let me switch off my video, Chair. Chair, I've got just few areas to zoom in, and my colleague has covered me on other areas. Chair, maybe it was a good reason that we have the department. I also want to agree with the minister on the issue that the department also have a history of challenges itself, which are so historical, and perhaps some of the challenges that are still being characterized are of historical nature in the department itself. So But however, after the presentation, which was all about how the whole aspect of budget has been reprioritized to an extent that now it has actually touched on the service for the poor in different manners. Now it's so unfortunate that now we're to the very aspect which we wanted to, you know, address in as far as, you know, availability of housing for our poor people in a form of grants which were not being utilized, you know, effectively has resulted in treasury or has resulted in a way that budget was reprioritized and the grants were then shifted to for other specific purposes or to fill up other specific purposes. So it's very much no, unfortunate because, you know, dealing with the issue of housing, availability of sites, you know, and other services is part of dealing with the poverty and inequality at the same time. So it obviously speaks to the area that now, unfortunately, like I'm saying, the poor would not benefit in that regard. So now I'm even more worried. I'm not sure whether Treasury is here, that Treasury went to bully the department into submission over Mangaung and took over a sizable portion of budget, if I'm interpreting the minister quite correctly, correct me. But I think it's not acceptable that Treasury should go and just bully without the engagement of the ministry around such situations. So if it was to be my way, was that now Treasury was supposed to return that money that they bullied the department over Mangaung Metro. Not because I'm coming from Mangaung Metro, but I'm just raising the principle here. So maybe it will be proper that after this meeting, Honorable Chair, that, you know, that discussion, which was so discomfortable from the department, needs to be taken forward again, such that Treasury, if the Treasury is here, must then tell us how did it come that it should, you know, reach that situation where it bullied the department and without engagement and scooping up a certain budget and redirected outside, you know, the political scope. What could have happened in that situation? Maybe if Treasury is here, I hope Treasury is here. So that there should be engagement with the department and Treasury over certain other, you know, areas which are critical in as far as, you know, cooperation between Treasury and the department. Even if there are difficult circumstances, but it doesn't mean, you know, gate crashing, which is uncalled for. So that would be one proposal moving forward, Chair, around that issue. But also what I want to know is from slide 10, I see there are 000, was it this 00 card or what? I'm not sure what I will end up reading something that is wrong. But I've seen on slide 10 there are 00. I don't know what is happening around those 00. Maybe if I could get an explanation what is happening around that. On the incomplete housing project, I don't know whether that the department has a consolidated number of incomplete housing in the country, because it's one of the outcry when you move from one town to this town, incomplete housing project. Is there any specific budget allocation from the department which is now set to complete this? If it's there, let's know how is the department going to approach that? And how many of these houses which are here, when, is there any plan to complete everything in a particular framework? that with this area of incomplete housing project is now buried, or do we keep on with simply on other new projects and leave out this one, whether it's a very clear plan around. Thank you very much, Chair. Let me stop at this moment.
Thank you, Honorable Kaiso. Honorable members, any other take-up before I come in? No? Okay. Let me come in and start with all members have left and thank you, Honorable Minister and CFO and the department for having made the presentation on what is happening in your sector. Well, my first comment would be, Honorable Minister, I like the prioritization of the most vulnerable as you provide a human settlement in housing. This thing that the strongest in the front of the queue is not working. So it's something that we think we definitely support, and we are wishing you well with it. Number two, I agree with our minister. This 1 year contract thing is not started, it doesn't work. What can you do in 1 year? What can you plan and so on? Even 3 years for me, minister, is again not optimal. So I think it's something that you definitely need to engage on with National Treasury and Public Service Commission. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Imagine that. Heightened overhead, new people everywhere, there's somebody coming in the system. While one's still trying to understand what's happening in the sector and so on, now you must terminate it. I wouldn't also go for a 1 year contract. Even a 3 year contract is not ideal for me. Coming to the question, Minister, you spoke about things and you still Mr. Shekhar, in their presentation here, they said when it comes to COE and the cuts there, each case is considered on its merit. Critical posts are being protected. But I hear you saying something. Please comment on that. Your agencies for special. Your social housing regulatory authority and the NHSC. Just want to get a feeling. How are they performing? So that you get the full picture of the sector. And an issue always raised about National treasury cutting, but my question is that process not consultative, right? And when I hear the CFO again, we'll talk about certain grants and show that those grants were not performing, hence they became or in those provinces were not performing and they got targeted. So they were signed on. So in any case, even if those grants were not cut, they were not performing, they're not going to be able to perform. There was no magic that was going to come in all of a sudden the grant perform. And as you know, there's always what we call the last term spike in expenditure, where departments just spend for the sake of it because they fear that money is going to be taken away. But my question is, what's your comment on this thing that cuts were not just on grants were not just really needed, and there were science behind it, and there was a criteria which was being used, and that criteria was, amongst others, non-performing grants, not just this year, but even in previous years. I would like to hear your comment on that one. For me, Minister, CFO, these budget cuts, we all know where they come from, that there was under collection of revenue because of the non-performing economy. So the reprioritization of the cuts, whatever, it's supposed to be temporary. So what's going to take us out of this temporary mode is to grow the economy. So my question is, what are we doing as a department to ensure that we are growing the economy? For instance, what are we doing to ensure that the material is being used in this sector, which is a big sector, is produced locally, so that you can have localization and we create jobs in the country? Remember, everything that we import is negative to the economy, but even more important, is like we are exporting jobs. What are the concrete things that we are doing to make sure that we try all the parts of this ERRP? I saw in a presentation in the slide there you do a ERRP, but what are these things that we are doing to ensure that what we procure there is being manufactured in the country? How do you promote that so that you can create jobs and respect your cost localization? Honorable Minister, we have got the Department of Water and Sanitation here, and there is no human settlement without water and sanitation. I just want to check the collaboration between the department in ensuring that the left hand knows what the right hand is doing, because these are the complementary goods, so to speak, public goods. The collaboration, working together, any challenges, not just at national, but even at the provincial level and at the local government. Thank you so much, Minister. Back to you. You decide which one to take and which one to refer to your team. Thank you so much. Minister, are you muted? Are you there?
Yes.
Human settlement, is the minister still there?
Yes, I'm here, Chair.
Please come in. Okay.
Yes, thank you very much. Chairperson, just to start appreciating members' input, let me just ask my CFO to quickly deal with other issues, and then I'm going to come in. Quite a number of issues that I will have to come and respond as I choose the response. CFO?
Thanks, Honourable Minister. I will deal with the easy one. I will start from the chairperson. Chairperson, the process. What happened this year is we were told about the budget cut. The overall figure we were not consulted on. We got a letter, our ENE. Our ENE is the estimate of the national expenditure.
Therefore, your line just to restart, your line got cut.
Oh, apologies only. I will start with the chairperson's question regarding whether the process was consultative, whether it was fair. So basically what actually happened was for this financial year, we knew about the budget cut because Freedom told us that they will need to cut us in year, but we didn't know the figure. Then we received an ENE with a cut. So basically what they did, they went and gave us one figure, 1.7 billion for the provincial grant, the human settlement development grant. They gave us one overall figure for the urban settlement development grant and so on and so on. Then what they said to us was, decide on how this cut is going to be. That's when we started to have several meetings with National Treasury, because what National Treasury had in mind, because we allocate our grants based on a formula. They thought that when we do the cut, we are going to use the formula. Because the first time we made a first submission, we were less, I think we did 2.8 billion, because we looked at the proposal. And then they came back to us, they said, no. Where do you expect us to get the difference from? As human settlement sector, you need to give us 3.2 billion. It was non-negotiable, because they came with the figure. What we had to do was to now come up with a criteria on how are we going to share amongst provinces, national, and our entities. So that's what we basically did. So our starting point was to look, because for the human settlement development grant, they wanted 1.8 billion, 1.7 billion. So what we did was to say, okay, if we use the formula, there are those provinces that are doing very well. There are those provinces that didn't do very well in the prior years. So we agreed as a department that we are going to use performance-based to effect the cut. We had a meeting with National Treasurers because they wanted us to take them through. We took them through our criteria, and then they did agree on the criteria. Because we had evidence. We looked at the prior year performances. We looked at the in-year performances. When it comes to the metropolitan municipalities, we looked at the prior year performances, and then we looked at the in-year performances. And then we agreed. So we were left with the cut on the operational budget and transfers. Now, they wanted 160 million. Now, the difficulty was that was within the operational budget, we've got the transfers to the entities. So we had a meeting with the entities to ask them if they can contribute towards the 160. Because if it meant that as national department, we take 160 from our goods and services, we were not going to be functioning as in now because we were going to close shop. Because it was taking half of our operational budget back to the fiscal. So we had to call in our entities. When we look, I'm going to respond to that, including the performance of the entities herein. So when we call the entities, we looked at the performance of the entities. When we look at our MTSF target, the first home finance, they've done very well. They have overachieved. And that is NHFC, because they are the implementing agent for the first home finance. They've already met 20,000 on the target of the NTSF. We looked at them and then we said to them, they can contribute 25 million towards the 160. One entity that is doing very well is the CISO. You know, when this entity started, we never thought that we'll see a year whereby CISOs will be self-sustainable. Come this year, we called CISOs, we said, CISOs, you have got reserves. You have been collecting revenue because CISOs are collecting a lot of revenue. And then they had money end of the financial year. We said to CISOs, what we are getting from the fiscal is 24.9 million. If we can cut that one because we are collecting revenue, you can be sustainable. CISOs agreed because they are doing very well. They gave us the 24.9 million. Hence, on the presentation, we are putting that after taking the 24.9 million, we thought that the reserve that CISOs are sitting with, Treasury is going to agree for them to keep the surplus. But Treasury came back now. They say they want the surplus. They are not agreeing for the CISOs to retain the surplus. And that's why we went back to Treasury and said, but that is not fair. Because CISOs has already contributed 24.9 million on the budget reprioritization, hoping that National Treasury will allow them to retain the surpluses so that they can continue to function. Because if they don't, it's going to be a situation of a growing concern. And then when you look at the social housing is a basket of issues. There's a lot that is happening on the social housing space, which is our social housing regulatory space. There's a lot that's happening there.
CFO, please, my apologies for coming in while you are coming. Just hold it for a second. I know National Treasury is on the platform, and I just want to prime them. So if after this, all this and so on, you are able to come in, please do that. But if you are not, you can always come back to us with your response. I just wanted to prime them so that I don't ambush them with bail. Yeah. So yeah, they are on the platform. So continue, ma'am.
Thank you. During the midterm budget adjustment, we went to National Treasury because we wanted additional funding for CISOs. But we knew that Treasury told us there's no additional money. But CISOs has got a lot of projects that they cannot kick in, and there are a lot of projects that are still behind, but they need additional funding. And then Treasury said, no, there's no additional money. You need to find it within your corpus to make sure that you prioritize. So this is one of our, then they said that if you think that this, like social housing is your priority as human settlement, because we need social housing, we need to prioritize. So that's what Treasury said when it comes to us. Yes, we were aware because the guidelines were clear. There's no additional funding. So we were supposed to get money somewhere so that we can put more money on our social housing. So our entity chairperson, as I said, that is very well. And when you look at the report from the Auditor General, we had our portfolio committee, whereby the Auditor General was presenting the performance of the sector, including our entities. All of our entities are doing very well. Even the Auditor General was highlighting that they looked at them. All of them, they have also improved when it comes to the audit, the audit outcomes by the AG. We have really moved a lot when it comes to our entities together with the audit and the issues that have been raised and the service delivery issues that have been raised around some of the entities within the human settlement. I'm going to jump to the policy issues. Honorable Minister will deal with them. I'll go to the prioritization with what Honorable Mkhazana said. I agree. Moving funds is the best option. However, it's not easy to move funds. Because when we move funds, when we go to the portfolio committee usually will be asking us, when you are moving funds, what about the beneficiaries that are still in that province? What about those residents? Because now people, when you move funds from Gauteng to Free State, it means that the people in Gauteng are suffering. They're not getting the services back. So what we usually do is moving funds is the last option. Yes, it is the best option, but there is a lot that we are doing before we can start moving funds from the spending provinces or the spending methods to the non-spending. Because by reallocating or moving funds is because we don't want to be closing the year with unspent funds. Because the unspent funds are subject to the rollover processes. And most of the time, there is a lot when it comes to the MFA. When it comes to the rollover and the MSME, it's a bit complicated. Because I'll give one example. There was unspent funds that were sitting with City of Tshwane. City of Tshwane lost close to 200 million for the financial year that has just ended, back to the national treasury. The reason being, they did not submit the pre-audited annual financial statement. Then the MMC comes in and says to Minister, I had an issue whereby I requested the Auditor General to give me the time before I can submit. Auditor General granted me the time extension on submitting the AFS. And then National Treasury comes in and says, but you didn't submit on the 31st of August. We are not approving your rollover. So these are the kind of things I'm saying that when we move funds, it's when we start looking at those kinds of things so that by end of the financial year, we are not sitting with a lot of unspent funds, because unspent funds are subject to certain sections in the Act, and other than that, they will revert back to the revenue. But before we move funds, we look at those provinces and metros that have got the capacity to absorb additional funds, and they've got projects. Because when we move funds, we don't change our annual plan. Because what we will be profiting from the City of Tshwane, for example, we expect it to be delivered in the City of Joburg. If we are moving Tshwane, if we are moving money from Tshwane to Johannesburg, the same as in the provinces. If we are moving and spend money from Free State to Gauteng province, we are not changing our plan. Because we are saying we are taking 50 million from Free State province. We are expecting Gauteng province to give us those units that we are forfeiting from the other provinces. So yes, as a sector, when it comes to the time like now, around December, January, this is the time that, as I was presenting earlier on, and the color coding was to show that we are not doing very well as a sector because we are red. And we are acknowledging that we are not doing very well. And the Honorable Minister, in her opening remarks, she did allude to it that we are not doing very well. There are pockets. That those other provinces and metros that are performing very well, that those other ones that are struggling. So even if we are going into the metro space, we offer capacity. But with our budget cut now, our hands now are a bit tighter because we need to go and assist the provinces and the metros. But because we don't even have enough in our goods and services, because we need to utilize some money to get capacity to go and assist the provinces and the metros. But once we have done that, we request them to submit the plans. We look at the improvement plan. We say, give us what you think. We look at the procurement. Because most of the biggest stumbling block when it comes to the performance and the spending is the procurement. When we find that, for the provinces now in November, December. They are still telling us about the procurement. We are aware, we are alert to the fact that there is no way that by the 31st of March, that particular province will be able to spend 100% of their grant. So those are the situations that we deal with. Then those are the decisions that will make a decision after minister has spoken to the MECs and agreed, and the MMCs and the mayors has agreed. Then we start the process to write to the National Treasury to request if we can move funds. But yes, Treasury does agree with us when we make proposals to move funds from the performing provinces to the non-performing provinces. I think, Honorable Minister, some of the questions, I will leave them to the Honorable Minister that are more policy related. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, CFO. Let me start, Chairperson, with what Honorable Sheikh Imam has raised. One, I think our policy currently allows for multi-pronged approach. So meaning that we provide shelter for the vulnerable based on the constitutional obligation that we do. Secondly, we provide service size in terms of what is required for us as part of the services that we provide. Thirdly, we provide for what we call the NHFC first home financing for those who are getting into the market for the first time, but also are getting subsidized by us. And then we've got what we call rental stock that we focus on as well in terms of what social housing provides and community evening provide. So, Honorable Sheikh Imam, so it's a multi-pronged approach. And if we are to talk about the issue of what policy provides services, currently in terms of policy, the best are the ones that are given that opportunity size. And if you look at when we talk about our MTSS target, you see that there are targets annually as well for provision of service size. So it's not a new thing that would be done later. It's something that is being done, it's expanded, especially even when we look at the areas, for example, of informal settlement upgrading grants. For example, recently I was in Ward 41 in Nelson Mandela Bay. The entirety of that ward has been as a result of the intervention of the informal settlement upgrading grant, where you have 7,000 households who have sites. Yes, they are in informal settlement, but they have sites. They have sites. They have water. They have electricity. They have sanitation. And then others are starting to build RDPs in that area. But that service is what we have. So there are quite a number of process houses when you look at what they are providing in terms of informal settlement upgrading grant. You're saying to us, looking at 80% of the population will end up needing this, is this sustainable? It is sustainable if it goes on to the multi-pronged approach, where we say the vulnerable have to be protected based on constitutional obligations. Those who are in the middle, missing middle, that needs government intervention and support should continue. And those who are able to provide for themselves can continue to provide for themselves. And if you look at urban areas and what we call intermediate cities, or secondary cities as well, you see that there's a growth in terms of rental stock that you are providing and supporting. We've got to continue as government to do this, because government is in nature is developmental and intervention is in approach. If you leave holistically all this to private sector, it will not be able to respond to the demands and the needs of South Africans, who majority continue to be the working class. So that's why the approach of government remains critical and important for us to pursue and shouldn't be abandoned. Then you talk about the issue of waiting lists and those disasters. We have decided as the department that we want to implement what we call a digitization of our system. We currently have HSS and we also have a beneficiary. I can say upfront, Honorable Sheikh Imam and Chairperson and members, I've said publicly. system is not transparent, is not allowing accountability, and is not free from manipulation. And that's why we want to change the system. We started a process, and then SICA said to us, we are not allowed by law to do directly as the department, and therefore we needed them to do the process. We are currently in conversation with them. We are not seeing eye to eye, but what they are giving us as time frame is what we both think is acceptable, especially in the IT environment where today, with the AI and all this advancement of fourth industrial revolution, they are giving us this time, which is longer. And also, we've been saying to them, there are products in the market that can be adjusted, and they can just, because all you need to put the product is on the security platform and protect government information. But for the product itself to be adjusted, is available in the market. And we've searched in the market, there are quite a number, they just need IT in there and there. And there will be efficient, where, for example, can allow us automatically to reprioritize or put in the top a person with disability immediately they apply, put in the top a senior citizen, so that you don't have a 30-year-old getting an RBC while a 76-year-old is waiting. So that, those are some of the things that we want to do. And we are hoping maybe before the end of this year, we should have an agreement with SPIC just so that they can be able to allow us to proceed with what we want to do, intention to try and get our system platform. What do you like you do with electoral commission, where you can just simply punch a number and then it tells you you applied, you were approved, and you have been allocated a house in this site, or you have applied, you do not qualify for the following reason. And that's, those are some of the things that we want going forward. The last point raised by Honorable Sheikh Imam around the issue of selling of houses. We do this through advocacy. I think it's raised as well by Honorable Matapa. It's through advocacy that we can be able to deal with some of these things. So you can't stop them. Current policy says after 8 years, the person can sell. Normally, they will have to give us the first right of refusal, but they do not do that. And it's some of the things that we are trying to address with our policy review, Chairperson. Honorable Mlenzana raised the issue of... can we justify non-spending when money has been borrowed? We definitely can't justify that, Honorable Mlenzana. And that's why what we do actively as a portfolio is to constantly monitor quarterly, actually bi-monthly, the department presents to MINMET performance of the provinces and performance of the municipalities, both in terms of targets and in spending. Then secondly, in that, when we come to MINMET, as the CFO was saying, then we look to say, okay, this one is not there for me, to protect that money does not get wasted, sits in our account, but service is needed. What we've got to acknowledge is that this is one of the critical service delivery portfolio that at least 60% of the people who are unhappy about on the community are because of this. So that's where we are, and that's why we are trying to ensure that we spend. So we have mechanisms to make sure that we spend. We can tell you anytime, like, and we ask them individually. I mean, we sat in the last week in MINMET, and we were asking each MEC to account. And we were asking each MMC from every municipality, what is the problem? That's why CFO can tell you that MMC of Pune, this is how he responded. MMC of Nelson Mandela Bay, this is how they responded. And Minister of MEC for Limpopo would have presented the way. MEC for Western Cape would have said, because of the restructuring of their department, that's why there was a delay, recruitment, and all those things. That's why they have not been able to. So we pay attention as national department, but we also play an active role in ensuring that we protect state funds. Not only protect state funds, but we ensure quality spending with service delivery. Then we come to what Honorable Matapa is, or the issue of ceiling versus posting. What has happened is that, Chair, we had a list of critical posts that we needed to fill, that we had identified as a department based on the mandate and areas of non-performance or improvements that we wanted to see. One of the areas is around emergency housing and informal settlement upgrading. Now, what has happened is that when the cuts happened or the reprioritization happened, then it meant that we needed to reduce the number of vacant posts that we needed to fill. For example, if you needed three chief directors who are planners, then you would have had to say, I'm going to get one. So that's what we had to do as a department. So that's what it means. The filling, we're now filling the remainder of what we have money for, And we're not looking only on this financial year. We look at outer years as well in terms of allocated. We find that we might have enough money for this year to add two more posts. But when you look at the outer year, then you realize that those posts, we will have no money for them. And therefore, then we withdraw them and not allocate money for them. Honorable Matapa, the issue of, I think others, CFO has answered, the illegal occupation, I have responded, is what we can do in advocacy and rely on law enforcement agencies to support us. And then on the issue of collaboration, I must say, on the cards, we've not had a bilateral with the Department of Water and Sanitation. Just to look at that, I think it's a good suggestion, we'll look into it. Chairperson, I think CFO talked about the issue of SRA and NHFC and our performance of the entities. Our entities previously were engulfed by governance issues that were not correct. We've closed that gap. We've appointed boards, and we've also appointed senior executives, so there is accountability. Then there's an issue in terms of, so the performance is improving. The issue of each case on merit by treasury, I don't think it's accurate on cost of employees' check. It's not correct. They have given us a cut. And then they said, out of that cut, then prioritize what you can do and submit to public service. They did, I am not aware of a conversation where ourselves, where we were able to say we need 15 posts. And then they said, okay, justify why you need 15 posts. Therefore, no, they cut and then we had to make do and reprioritize based on their cuts. And on the issue of cuts in terms of the reprioritization in terms of the grant, we were engaged. We were able to be transparent and open to them. And this was in agreement, as the CEO, the CFO has said. So I think the CFO has responded. The issue, Chair, of 1 year to 2 years, we were compromising to 3 years. Obviously, the 1 year is not working. I think we've answered all the questions. I'm not so sure if I've left anything. But we appreciate some of the issues we'll take up, look into them to improve our system and improve our workspace. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. Except the most important one, the contribution of the department, the ERP, and all the other things.
Oh, okay. Chair, we do, as a infrastructure portfolio, we do contribute, one, in terms of stimulating the economy. One of the issues that we have done as a department and portfolio, we have set aside. We have committed to 40% of our expenditure budget to women. And every bi-monthly, we monitor how the provinces are doing. Limpopo is doing well. They're sitting almost 100% of their expenditure is on women companies. And Mpumalanga is also sitting well. Other provinces are not doing well, and we are pushing them to spend more on youth as well. So these are transformational issues that we are focusing on in terms of ERRP, reconstructing the economy. That's what we are doing as a portfolio. And then another issue is around capacitation. Through NHRB and NHBRC, we are training, partnering with institutions of higher learning such as UNISA and GIPS to train women contractors so that we capacitate them, understanding that when you say you are going to set aside, you must have supported them to be available in the pool and in terms of that, but also around our own other portfolios that we are doing, that supporting SMMEs, development programs that we have, partnering with FIFA through NHBRC, CISOs and PPRA. Currently, we are working on transformational issues in PPRA to bring in principal agents so that we can support them and sustain them. The target is about 10,000 of them, of previously disadvantaged, so that they can participate in the mainstream economy of estate agents. Again, in terms of employment, job creation, we have potential temporary jobs that we contribute to. Through construction, we do contribute to temporary jobs, but also permanently with supporting and in terms of our SMEs and the companies that we support, we are able to contribute to the ERRP, but more infrastructure development in terms of even our social housing program, where we finance new developers and developers that are emerging, but also those who are needing support through NHFC as well. We do support in terms of development and contribution to our ERRP. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honourable Minister and your team, thank you very much. The engagement is well appreciated. I'll then be requesting Honourable Mashaba, but before he comes in, as you are passing short, what's your view on CETA? Is it still relevant? Does it enhance service delivery or service delivery or repeat it? Is it not a high time we revisit that? Because you are not the first department to speak about this. And I'll also be asking the same question to Honourable Mashaba. And Bangazi, you may just prepare the answer when you come in. Honourable Minister, parting shot.
No, thank you very much, Chair. We appreciate this engagement with yourself in explaining what we do, because sometimes because you find that people have a misconception of what we do, and sometimes departments are pointed or painted that they are not doing monitoring, they are not doing their work, and therefore sometimes they need the interventions of your national treasury in our work. I can assure you, Chair, that we are quite capable of doing our work oversight, but also providing direction and what needs to be done. And consistently, we do raise with our colleagues in National Treasury to allow us, as policy departments, to remain with policy, to remain giving direction in our sector, because we know better in what we need to do and what we need to achieve in our portfolio. The issue of CETA is a challenge. We have started in Cabinet to review this. We've asked the Minister of Digital Communication and Digital Technology to look at improvement of CETA. I think it will address both Parliament and the nation quite soon in how they intend to revamp. They have acknowledged the weaknesses there in what is happening in CETA, and we are hoping that as they do that, they will be able to provide efficient services for all of us. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you, CFO. Thank you, Team Human Settlement. We really appreciate your being here. And I think we managed to do everything within this designated time. Honourable Deputy Minister, Honourable, yes, Robert Kaiser?
Yes, sorry, Chair, to come in at this stage. I thought maybe in the middle of the discussion, you raised the issue of the Treasury would come in, but then I think if the time, I don't know when, perhaps we would come into other issues which were raised by the defencement, but it's like we no longer have time. I just wanted to remind Chair about it.
Thank you. National Treasury, you want to say something? Everyone? One team? National Treasury? Okay. Therein, I think we need to send some of the things to them, some of the issues which are coming up here. Thanks, Honorable Kaiso. It looks like they are not responding, Honorable Kaiso. Okay, let's get to the next department and allow Honorable Mashaba, Deputy Minister of Water and Sanitation.
Chair, are we released from the meeting?
Yes, Minister. Yes, Minister, you definitely.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Honorable Mashaba,
No, thank you very much, Your Excellency, Chairperson Shenya, and all honorable members of the Select Committee, to the leadership of Human Settlement led by Minister Bupai, while they are leading the platform. And with us here, Chair, on behalf of Minister Matumane, who are with the DG and the team and the CFO, we are very pleased that, as always, we will come and appear in front of your committee, firstly, to come and account, but secondly, to seek guidance and also sought support around issues of appropriation in our quest to deliver on our mandate. Just to indicate, Chairperson, that the decisions by government on the basis of the fiscal condition our country faces has affected many government departments, and including ourselves, wherein we were required to to do a reprioritization in our budget, and then it had to decrease in terms of the appropriation that was there by more than 800 million. But more importantly, Chair, the DG and the team will demonstrate to say how are we offsetting that and what will be the impact. We know that, Chairperson, we are coming to you where there are a number of questions that are being asked in the country, and there are a number of challenges. One of the challenges our people are asking, are we having a water crisis? Are we going to have water for domestic use, including economic and social and other benefits that are there? Our answer as a department, Chairperson, is that South Africa remains a water-scarce country, and our actions must be very corresponding in terms of how do we manage our water scarcity. Because we continue to receive rainfall that is nearly half of the world's average, Chairperson. But as a Minister of Water and Sanitation, all the actions we are taking, we are going to avoid a situation where the country can have a water crisis by 2030. Most of the intervention by ministers and ourselves, there were too many projects and big projects that were delayed. And when they were delayed, they were going to have an impact about the availability of water just beyond 2030. You will look at big projects like Yolusutu Highlands, a very important issue that we raised with yourself the last time we came. And with your support and led by the President and the Minister, the DGs have sorted all the issues with the Kingdom of Lesotho. And already work has commenced with the question of Lesotho Highlands Phase 2, which is a very good development so that a province like Gauteng, in terms of our integrated water river system, we don't have a problem. In the Western Cape, you could see that Ben Williams Dam, it was delayed for quite some time. It's back on the fold. Our teams are hard at work, and they were very pleased that that economy, including the farming communities in the Western Cape, they will be covered in terms of the progress made. And then you look at KwaZulu-Natal, the problems that they have about the guarantee of water availability. You could see that Umkhumazi Water Project, that covers 5 districts, including eThekwini, is back online, Chairperson. It might have taken long to conclude the issues of agreements between ourselves and the necessary municipalities so that our implementing agents, Umgeni, Uthukela Water Board, and TCTA, they are able to proceed. Those are some of the strides we're making, including Umzumbuvu, that they discussed it even before some of us were born. All the other outstanding issues and the decision around funding and when to start and where, working with National Treasury, will resolve those particular issues, Chairperson. And those people of the Eastern Cape, especially in that escarpment, they too are human. They will have access to water, but water will bring other spin-offs that can generate other opportunities in terms of access to water, agriculture, and so forth. And you look at the people of Sekhukhune going to Bulawayo, going to Mogalakwena, a very beautiful dam in Sekhukhune called the Dwarf Dam, completed by our government. And in that, in terms of the partnership model that the minister has introduced, in line with the president's decision of the social compact with business, we'll be able now, in terms of the olifants management modeling, where we're working with the Balelo Water Youth Association, the mining community will contribute the 50% and ourselves as government, so that we can cover this. The water will never leave those communities of Sekhukhune, including the Nebo Plateau. It goes to these areas of Bulawayo and then until Mogalakwena to support. Those are the biggest intervention, whether you go to Mpumalanga, you have lost of issues that are being sorted. Umkhanyako, the chair, we've always spoken about it. The minister has intervened even on the weekend, the president was there. And you could see that Jozani Dam, which is called Pomona Port now, all the necessary infrastructure is being attended to, and including the Mandlakazi scheme. We are bringing water to many of these particular areas. And we need to indicate that, therefore, in terms of water security, we will not have problems. But then the department insists that we have to be able to look at the question of water mix. In the water mix, we have to exploit groundwater systems. There are many other areas where groundwater will come in. And it's where even infrastructure is not there. It will assist a lot. And there's a lot of these other areas where groundwater is our potential, including now because of climate change, the aquifers can run dry. And we will do artificial recharging of these aquifers, Chairperson. But we are going to go big, Chairperson, on water needs. In other words, the issue of recycling, reuse, and reclamation is an important strategy. There is too much wastewater that goes back into our river system. That wastewater, when you use what you call circular economy, Shen, an example in Pietermaritzburg, Umgeni presented to go and open a state-of-the-art plant there, where the wastewater effluent has been treated into a standard that it makes even the treatment cost that gets to Umgeni River down to what a Durban, it gets to be reduced. But some of that effluent can be used for other issues like industrial, for agriculture. And the sludge is treated to higher standards, the higher standard, so that you can produce manure, your fertilizers, especially in the light of Ukraine-Russia conflict where there's issues of fertilizers running out. But then there's an issue of production of energy, Chairperson. That plant is going to give us 1 megawatt in terms of electricity generation. You could see it's a very, very close circular economy, and it must happen in housing. The minister is interested in many other areas, whether in Northwest, there's a Bulela Maize project that is happening. We've intervened in Mpuleni. For the first time, Honorable Sheng, you will hear people of Mpuleni. The sewer is no longer in the street. Rainwater has done well with the support of the DG. We are actually revitalizing. We are looking at a new model now, Sheng and the committee members, where we deploy these water boards closer to these municipalities where they don't have the money, the balance sheet, and technical know-how. They will look at a model of forming an agency there where rainwater will build the capacity of the municipality, will invest its own resources, replace the old infrastructure where more than 52% of the water has been lost, and then from there deal with the issues of revenue management. That is what we call it, your build, own and operate, but then there's also the build, own, the build, operate, train and transfer. That's what we're looking at in terms of our partnership office, and we're looking at many of these other issues. But I'm not going to talk to them, Chair, because you go to KwaZulu-Natal, we are intervening. You go to Mpumalanga, the Limpopo, Eastern Cape, there's not even a single province where we're coming in, because no South African access to water and sanitation. We have reintroduced our own tools just to check the issues of how water is managed in the country. The blue drop is back so that we can be able to ascertain whether the quality of the water that our people are exposed to use for various uses is very fit or not. And our report that the minister will be releasing at the end of this month or early next week, we should be in a position to demonstrate that a number of municipalities are struggling and they need our support. Some of them, they don't have the technical know-how. Plants are not working well. But some of them, they don't have money. They are broke shell. They run out of chlorine just to treat the water. You remove your microbial and chemical components in water. And then the green drop the state of our wastewater systems, many municipalities, and not a single municipality, has a situation where there is no sewer that is running in the street, irrespective of which local party runs. There are communities that are exposed to inhumane conditions, where sewer runs in the street. And the functionality of the wastewater systems that are overcapacitated, they were not upgraded to build the issues of population growth and others and the load. And working with COGCAM and SALGAM and National Treasury, we are intervening so that our people can live in an environment that is not actually harmful. We are very close now, Chair, to conclude issues of the reconfiguration of our institutions. The water boards now, we've concluded them, Chair. They cover wall-to-wall coverage. The rainwater covers Mpumalanga and Gauteng. The formerly sediment must be set up, which we know now we have a valve central, and that valve central covers the Free State and the Northern Cape. Machalis covers the entire of the Northwest. Umgeni Tugela covers the entire KZN, and then the Bele covers Limpopo and the Overberg one. It covers beyond the Overberg Mountains. It now covers the entire Western Cape. And we're also concluding our task. Remember, there used to be irrigation boards, mostly white and mostly maize, and excluding other users. We are trying to do our final round of around transforming into people's organization around water management at the local level called the Water Use Association. And the numbers have been reduced. And then the last two, Sheng, we are increasing our catchment management agencies. Now we are looking at Ukomola Umzinkulu. We are looking at Val Orange. The boards are there. We are very pleased that our institutions are working currently in Parliament. They are discussing the possibility of the National Water Resource Infrastructure Agency. We are being supported by Cabinet. And we need to have that agency. It's not a new agency. We are bringing together the capacity in CCTA and our construction units so that independently these organizations can go to the market, can be able to do our major infrastructure, manage, get the funding that is there. These are some of the things. And our department has stabilized. On matters of our accrual, the turnaround plan on finances. We are very pleased. In as much as lately water is being politicized by other parties deliberately to try to get a leverage because it's a season around election. But we will remain focused and steadfast where communities have problems, like in Gauteng, matters are being attended to in many parts of our country, and we're increasing our collaboration with local government and municipalities. And we're receiving a very good support. That will be my long introduction the last time we met, Chairperson. And there are other matters that we'll discuss depending on what the members look at. But on the basis on why we're called today, I'll hand over to the Director General, Dr. Sean Phillips, and the CFO, that they take us through briefly on the presentation and the impact that has happened in terms of the adjustment appropriation bill that was presented by our Minister of Finance, and how, as a department, we are responding to those significant cuts that have been made. I thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, honourable members. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Let's go to the next slide, please. Chairperson, we were sent a letter dated the 17th of November where we were asked to respond in our presentation to various questions. The way we've structured the presentation is to enable us to answer all the questions that were put in the letter. I'm going to be assisted in making the presentation in certain parts by the CFO, Frans Moachi, and also by our Chief Director for Regulation, Annette Muir, and also by the Head of our water trading entity, Paulnell. To start off, if we go to initially the introduction, I'm just going to add a few points to add to the introduction made by the Deputy Minister. What this slide and the next slide shows is just a summary of some of our key strategic priorities of the department, the national department, and the progress that we've made with them. As honourable members will know, water has particular constitutional allocations of functions associated with it. Water services are constitutionally the responsibility of municipalities, whereas the national department has responsibilities in terms of the National Water Act for national water resource planning and for regulation, including the issuing of water use licenses. And also in terms of the Water Services Act is responsible as the regulator of water services delivered by municipalities. One of our key strategic priorities has been to strengthen our regulatory role. And in that regard, there's been some suggestions that an independent water regulator should be established. Minister Ntulu has decided, at least as an interim measure, to establish an advisory regulator commission, which has been in place for over a year now, and which is playing a very useful role in helping us, assisting us in, as an advisory capacity to improve our regulatory function. It is semi-independent in that it will be making its advices public. We have proposed amendments to the Water Services Act. A week or two ago, we published, after approval of Cabinet, the Water Services Amendment Bill for public comment. And after that period of public comment, we will then be going back to Cabinet to ask for Cabinet to approve it to be submitted to Parliament. The amendments in the Water Services Amendment Bill extend the powers of DWS as the regulator of our water services to give us similar powers that we have over water resources in terms of the National Water Act. And the amendments also strengthen the role of water services authorities as local regulators. And later in the presentation, we'll provide more detail in this regard. We'll also shortly be publishing revised norms and standards for water services under the Water Services Act. We are aware that we're not always consistent as DWS in terms of our regulatory actions. We have made it a priority for ourselves to make sure that all of our regional offices are consistent, so that if there's an offence committed in terms of the National Water Act, for example, pollution of water resources, we take regulatory actions consistently and timelessly whenever such instances occur. We have improved our turnaround times for water use licences, and we're in the process of further improving them, and we've also taken measures to strengthen regulation of tailing dams. One of the measures that we've done recently in the context of the regulatory reforms which have taken place in the electricity sector is that earlier this year, we issued a request for applications for water use licenses to use water resources to generate electricity, for example, through hydropower and floating solar power. We received applications for water use licenses for 2,850 megawatts of power production, which is quite substantial. It's the equivalent of a middle-sized coal power station. And we're busy processing those applications. And they should be start being approved during the first few months of next year. We've also established a water partnerships office together with the DBSA and SALDA to facilitate support to municipalities to enable an increase in private sector investment in water services and in areas where the private sector can get a return on investment, such as reducing non-revenue water and increasing water reuse. The Deputy Minister has covered our reconfiguration of the water boards. One of the key things that we're responsible for in terms of the National Water Act is to develop a raw water pricing strategy, which is put in place with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance. We've reviewed that and we'll be submitting that shortly to the Minister of Finance for his concurrence. As indicated by the Deputy Minister, the National Water Resource Infrastructure Agency Bill is currently before Parliament. That will, once, if and when passed, it will result in the establishment of the agency, which will amalgamate the TCTA, the water trading entity and the department, and the department staff for operation and maintenance of the national water resource infrastructure, such as the large dams. The main aim of creating the NWRIA is to establish an entity with a substantial balance sheet and revenues associated with them, which will be able to borrow more money than the TCTA is currently able to borrow, because the TCTA doesn't have assets with revenue streams associated with it and can only borrow on the basis of explicit treasury guarantees. And then finally, it's an ongoing priority of ours to tackle corruption in the sector. We recently presented together with the SIU to SCOPA on the progress with SIU presented on all its investigations into past DWS tenders and contracts, and some of them under the water that were done under the water boards over the last decade or so. And then we also presented the scope on how we've been collaborating with the SIU and how we've been implementing their referrals and recommendations. I think we can skip this slide. The Deputy Minister has covered that we reconfigured the water boards. There used to be 9 water boards, they're now 7, and then the final stage is now of implementing this reconfiguration. But perhaps just to add, just for clarity, the reasons why they were reconfigured. There were some problems with the old configuration, such as that there were some areas which needed to be serviced by water boards which weren't serviced. There was some institutional confusion in that some areas were serviced by multiple water boards. And we also wanted to align the boundaries of the water boards better with provincial boundaries, partly because the water boards' clients are municipalities, and provincial governments play a key role in coordination with municipalities, and therefore it assists us with a management of the relationships between the water boards and municipalities if the water board's boundaries are aligned with provincial boundaries. And also we wanted to achieve better economies of scale. Perhaps just to emphasize here, the water boards actually provide a function which in terms of the constitution is a municipal function. They provide a water services function. In terms of the Water Services Act, the minister is able to put in place water boards to assist municipalities. So water boards are a support function to municipalities, and they assist municipalities with providing bulk municipal water services to achieve economies of scale. So, for example, it's more efficient to have RAN water provide the bulk water services in Gauteng than to have each of the Gauteng municipalities provide its own bulk water services. Next slide, please. Before getting into the detail, just a little bit more in terms of introduction, in terms of some of the key questions related to supply and demand and this question as to whether we're going to run out of water as a country. Water is a very localized issue. It's not like electricity, where there's a national electricity grid. Water supply and demand is very localized, and there isn't a national water grid. So water demand and supply is dealt with on a local basis. Generally speaking, across the country, currently in terms of raw or untreated water, which we also call water resources, there's a balance between demand and supply, but there are localized deficits. And those localized deficits can be caused by various reasons, and I'll give a couple of examples now. One of the reasons for localized deficits can be a bad drought. The reason why Cape Town went to day zero for water was because there was an unprecedented drought in the Cape Town area. Similarly, the water shortages that have been experienced in Nelson Mandela Bay in recent years have been caused by a 1 in 100 years or more drought that occurred in that particular area of the Eastern Cape. However, as indicated by the Minister, there are other parts of the country which are not experiencing drought, but where there are raw water shortages. And the Deputy Minister mentioned two. One is Etigwini and the other is Gauteng. In Etigwini, the water resource planners in DWS have been predicting for a long time that demand for water is increasing in the Etigwini area, and that we need to build more water resource infrastructure to be able to provide more water to the Etigwini area. There have been plans in place to build the Umkhamazi Dam for a number of years. Unfortunately, that dam was delayed for a long time. There was not agreement from Etigwini Municipality to proceed with the project because Etigwini Municipality argued that the tariffs would be unaffordable. Over the last 2 years, under Minister Mkunu's leadership, we've managed to resolve that problem. We worked with the Infrastructure Fund and the Budget Facility for Infrastructure in National Treasury to find a blended finance solution, which has enabled the project now to proceed at a tariff which will be affordable to Etigwini Municipality. Just to explain that a little bit more, the TCTA is going to raise money from the private sector. National Treasury is also going to make a contribution, and that's why it's blended finance. The Umkhamazi Dam is going to be developed by Umgeni Uthukela Water Board, and they in turn are going to abstract water from the Umkhamazi system, treat it and sell it to Etigwini. And it's that tariff that Etigwini was concerned about, the price at which Umgeni Uthukela Water Board will sell the water to Etigwini. As I've indicated, that project is well overdue, but at least now it's moving, and the municipalities have agreed that it should proceed, and the TCTA is now preparing to move into the finance raising stage of the project. Unfortunately, because it's overdue, Etigwini is already experiencing water deficits, where occasionally demand for treated water is greater than supply, and Umgeni Uthukela Water Board can't provide additional treated water because it doesn't have any more, there isn't the additional raw water available to be abstracted by Umgeni Uthukela. So while we're waiting for the Umkhamazi Dam to be built, other measures are going to have to be taken, and Etigwini is particularly going to need to focus on reducing its non-revenue water and water losses. Water losses in Etigwini are particularly high, somewhere around 45%. And if that can be reduced, then it will reduce the pressure on their supply system. One of the challenges that we have as a country is the fact that we've already captured approximately 75% of the available surface water resources. And the remaining opportunities for capturing surface water through, for example, the construction of dams are the more expensive opportunities, because logically the engineers started with the cheaper opportunities first. So there are limits to which we can ensure water security in South Africa by building more dams. As the Deputy Minister indicated, South Africa is a water-scarce country. We get very low rainfall compared to other countries. We're going to reach the stage where there just won't be any more possibility for getting more water by building dams. We have to do other things too. We have to diversify the water mix. The Deputy Minister mentioned that we have to make more use of groundwater in a sustainable way. Our coastal towns and cities are going to have to increasingly make use of desalination seawater and water reuse from wastewater systems by the nature of the technology needs. And you can't have a huge groundwater scheme run by the national government like you have with the large dams. Groundwater is by nature individual boreholes which need to local reticulation. Similarly, desalination water, for technical reasons, desalination plants need to be developed locally and feed directly into municipal distribution systems. Water reuse needs to take water from municipal wastewater systems and treat it and then put it back into the water system. So many of the possibilities for developing for diversifying the water mix are going to have to be driven and implemented by municipalities. Our role will be, where necessary, to issue water use licenses to those municipalities. But also, we think there's a lot of potential for mobilizing private sector investment for these types of projects. And that's one of the reasons why we set up the Water Partnerships Office to assist municipalities to facilitate private sector investments in these kind of developments to sell water to municipalities. Now, in addition to diversifying the water mix, it's also going to be imperative that we have more effective water conservation and demand management in South Africa. As indicated by the Deputy Minister, we're a water-scarce country, but we have an anomaly in that while we're a water-scarce country, our average consumption per capita of water in South Africa is high compared to other countries. So we're going to have to become more effective in our communications and our awareness campaigns to bring down that average consumption per capita. Otherwise, with current increased level, increasing demand, and without reducing that consumption, there is a risk that there will be water shortages. So in summary, Chairperson, if we're going to avoid water shortages in future and avoid water becoming a constraint to economic growth, we need to do all of these things. We need to implement the remaining opportunities for capturing surface water. We need to diversify the water mix, and we need to have more effective water conservation and demand management. Next slide, please. When Minister Mthuna became minister, one of his focus areas was to accelerate many national water resource projects which had been delayed for many years. The Department of Water and Sanitation went through a difficult period where it had a high turnover of leadership, with more than five ministers over a 10-year period and more than 10 successive DGs and acting DGs over that 10-year period. And that resulted in a situation where when Minister Mthuna became minister, most if not all of the major projects were delayed or had stopped due to various blockages. We've successfully managed to unblock all those blockages. And all the projects listed here on the screen are now in the implementation phase. In the interest of time, I won't go through them in detail, but a couple of points to note is that there's more than 100 billion worth of projects on this page. It's not all of our projects. We have a lot of other projects. It's just some examples of projects which have been unblocked and are now in implementation. of these projects on the screen, more than 60% of their value is not funded from the fiscus. It's funded either from joint contributions between government and the private sector, such as the OMM project in Limpopo, which is a 24 billion rand 50-50 collaboration with the mining houses in Limpopo, or through borrowing from the banks and pension funds by the TTTA. So you can see from this slide that we are being relatively successful in terms of making sure that the water sector is financially self-sustaining and that it doesn't rely on the fiscus for funding, and that most of the money required for national water resource infrastructure development is borrowed from the private sector, and then those loans are repaid from revenue from the sale of water. Next slide, please. Just a little bit, because it's very topical, on the reasons for the current water supply challenges in Gauteng. The Lesotho Highlands Phase 2 project is one of the projects which was delayed. It was supposed to come on stream in 2019. As the Deputy Minister indicated, construction is now underway, but it's only due to come on stream now in 2028. What this means is that there isn't enough water in the integrated Vaal River system to sustainably supply the current levels of demand in Gauteng. Demand for water in Gauteng has increased. The population has increased from about 12 million to over 16 million over the last 10 years. And there's also been economic growth. So the way it works is that water comes from the dams in Lesotho into the integrated Vaal River system. That raw water is abstracted from Iran water, which treats it, stores it, and pumps it into the municipal reservoirs. And we put an abstraction limit on the amount of water that Iran water can abstract from the Vaal River system. And this, we have to do that in order to be responsible. While the Vaal Dam might be full now, there may well be a drought in a few months' time. So we have to keep enough water in the integrated Vaal River system to ensure that if there is a drought, then we won't go into a day zero type of situation in Gauteng, which would be catastrophic. We also have to make sure that there's enough water in the Vaal River system so that downstream users of the Vaal Dam get enough water and so that the environment as well can be protected. So currently, Rand water is already exceeding its abstraction limits from the Vaal River system, and it can't extract any more water, and it can't treat any more water than it's currently treated because of this abstraction limit. But the demand for water in Gauteng has increased, and occasionally, particularly during heat waves, for example, the demand for treated water from Rand water, from municipalities for Rand water to supply them with treated water, exceeds the available supply from Rand water. And so the current situation is that there's a very tight supply-demand relationship for treated water in Gauteng, and that makes the system very vulnerable to disruptions. So when there is a mechanical or an electrical failure, which is quite common in such a sophisticated system, it results in a situation where it becomes difficult for Rand water and the municipalities to adequately fill their reservoirs, because while they're filling the reservoirs, water is still being taken out. And that in turn results in a situation where the water levels in the reservoir are not high enough to provide sufficient pressure to enable water to get to high-lying residential areas. And that is why high-lying areas of Johannesburg, for example, have sometimes been for weeks without water. The solutions are for us to continue to implement the Lesotho Highlands Phase 2 expeditiously. Secondly, for the municipalities in Gauteng to reduce their non-revenue water, their water leakages. Currently, on average, municipalities in Gauteng lose a third of the water which is provided to them by Rand water through leaks. And also, again, we need to have a much more effective awareness campaign to get residents of Gauteng to use water more sparingly, to reduce the average consumption from 253 litres per day, closer to the world average of 173 litres per capita per day. I'm now going to hand over to the CFO to talk about some of the detailed questions which were asked by the committee related to the implications of the proposed allocation reduction of 881 million. CFO?
Thank you, PG, and everything. Thank you very much. Chairperson, the question that I'm responding to on the letter relates to the possible service delivery implications and the impact on the allocation reductions in key sub-programs that are critical, as indicated by the committee, and how we intend to absorb this in the budget and ensure that the impact is reduced on the service delivery aspect. I'll move to slide number 11. As indicated earlier on, 10%, the total reduction for the department amounts to 831 million, and this reduction is made up of 48 million from program 1, 331 million from program 2, and 501 million from program 3. In terms of program 1, Chair, it relates mainly to support pricing that the program is providing to the department. We managed also to implement the cost containment and measures and the guidelines that were provided by National Treasury, and the impact would not be that much and direct to service delivery for Program 1 administration. The water resources management, our second program, the adjustment that was processed there is 331 million, which is made up of transfer payments The first one being to the Komati Basin Water Authority, where we have a treaty with Eswatini. We are repaying some of the loans. However, I can confirm, Chairperson, that we do have sufficient reserves within the Komati Basin Authority to enable us to settle obligations in the current financial year. So there isn't any impact, but we'll have to cover up over the MTF. We also had a reduction of 100 million from the water trading entity. That was implemented from slow moving projects. We are currently implementing infrastructure procurement strategy on the water trading entity with regard to the project that Deputy Minister Mashobo and DG also referred to. So some of the projects were still lagging behind. However, we do have a strategy of recovery on those. And equally for this program, we did implement cost-contained measures as guided by National Treasury. And the total amount of those is 17 million. And under Water Services Management Branch, this is the branch with a significant portion of the budget of the department. An adjustment of 501 million was made, made up of 41 for regional bulk infrastructure grants and 224 million for water services infrastructure grants. And we also implemented cost containment measures for this program, totaling 19 million. Chairperson, this branch does have direct impact on service delivery, but I must also indicate that as we are implementing this cut, we have to look at the spending trend. Historically, the department didn't spend well. However, we demonstrated in the previous financial year the improvement that we have made. And the year before last, we underspent by over 2 billion. In the past financial year, it was around 800 million. And we have committed that in this financial year, we have spent the budget optimally. We are also managing our commitments, accruals, as well as payables. When we close the interim financial statement now, we had total amount of 437 being our accruals and payables. So all these factors, as well as the approved business plans, which our DPG Water Services Management had to also reconsider the ones that were recently approved, to make sure that we align those to the reduced funding. Chairperson, I'll move to slide number 12, which is a summary presentation of the adjusted appropriation, reflecting those three programs as well as the economic classification that I've referred to earlier on. Our transfers to the municipalities, conditional grants, here we are reflecting those provinces that we have adjusted. All the provinces have indicated that we have reduced the approved business plans, and our provincial offices work very closely with the municipalities to assess and look at individual projects, those that are ahead and those that were still in the process of planning, those that were approved recently. So there was actually a process through our provincial offices. We had to also review our payment schedule with the National Treasury after all these adjustments. So these are the transfers. The actual spending being reported in the subsequent period by the municipality to the department. And the next slide, also under the water services infrastructure grant, 244 was also adjusted across all the provinces using the same principle that I've indicated with the regional bulk infrastructure grant. And our provincial offices are constantly monitoring this project together with the municipalities. And where the need might arise, where we have to still move funds around, we'll also do so in accordance with the provisions of the Division of Revenue Act. But due diligence was applied by our provincial offices when we were effecting this adjustment. The other component of the regional bulk infrastructure grant relates to the indirect component, where the department is responsible for all these commitments in collaboration with the implementing agents. On this grant chairperson the total adjustments that were made, 308 million. This was to transfer funds from this grant to the water services infrastructure grant, but we also had in between adjustments between the provinces. For example, if you take Eastern Cape, that allocation as well as Mpumalanga, we have shifted those funds to their projects where we have projects that are moving under water services infrastructure. So our commitment to 39.2 billion, those are the ones that we are managing carefully together with accruals and payables to make sure that we remain within the allocation. Another adjustment that was made relates to conversion of 198 million rand from the capital component of the grant to water services to assist with the effluent intervention where we are supporting the municipality. Slide number 16% is where the 308 million that moved from the regional bulk infrastructure grant has been allocated, and that increased our intervention. Deputy Minister Matoben and DG also referred to various interventions in various provinces, including Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, as well as Limpopo. Limpopo remains the same. Those are the commitments we have made with the articulation component of the Giani project. And KwaZulu-Natal as well, we have been intervening there. And those are the prioritizations that we have made. There were also further prioritizations within the transfers that we are making to our water board that then both my principal spoke to earlier on. We have reprioritized funds mainly to Hammond's grant, which we are implementing through Mahali's water. There were also some reprioritizations to assist the Val Central, the project that they have taken over from the former Division Water. So this is just to confirm that we have also applied reprioritization of funds to align to some of the emerging needs that we are having in our community within this allocation. The next slide provides an indication of the municipalities where these cuts have impacted or the prioritizations that we have applied and the project name. They are all listed there for the Regional Bank Infrastructure Grant Schedule 5B. Then the next slide, slide number 19 also, for water services, we have indicated those specific municipalities. We have said that the provincial offices together with our DDG are working closely with. That summarizes up until slide 20, Chairperson, and I'll hand back to the Director General. Thank you.
Thank you very much, CFO. We were also asked questions about for a detailed report on support or interventions made by the department to address deteriorating capacity within local government. We were asked to provide information on the number of municipalities where the department is directly intervening, the number of municipalities whose water infrastructure is at critical risk of failure, and how many municipalities are supported to avoid the recurrence of the recent cholera outbreak. Since Minister Mthuma started just over 2 years ago, we have greatly strengthened our support to municipalities. We've established a new water services branch of the department, which wasn't there before. And the minister himself spends most of his time crisscrossing the country, visiting those municipalities with severe challenges with water and sanitation services. He meets with the political and administrative leadership of the municipalities, together with DWS officials and water board officials, with the aim of agreeing on an action plan to address the problem. We have the RFID grant and the WITSID grant, as the CFO has described, and we are now being much more strategic in terms of allocating that grant to support these improvement plans in the municipalities with problems. So currently we have 381 separate WITSID projects in 119 of the 144 water services authorities in construction, and we have 99 RBIC projects in 20 different water services authorities in construction. For all of those projects, we monitored implementation and we provided advice to municipalities. But in some municipalities which are already lacking capacity, we also appoint implementing agents to assist the municipalities. And usually the implementing agents are water boards. For some projects, we go even further and we have regular progress meeting with the municipalities to look at progress of the projects and to address bottlenecks and delays. And in some projects, for example, with the Giani Water Project and the reticulation there currently being done by Mopani District Municipality, we've even gone as far as allocating some of our officials to participate in the municipal bid committees to ensure that the procurement is done properly. So in the following tables, we've got lists of major projects which have a high level of DWS support per province. We haven't listed all the projects that we're doing. You can see that that would make for a very long presentation, given that we've got over 470 different water WSIG and RBIC projects in implementation around the project. But in these tables which follow, we've just highlighted some of the major ones to give the committee an indication of the level of support that we're providing and the degree to which we're now mobilizing our water boards to also assist municipalities. So some examples of some of the municipalities where we're providing a very high level of support, not just funding, but also very, very strong support in terms of monitoring and assisting with implementation, include Lekwa, Machabeng, Ugud, Swani, Impuleni, Mopani, and Umkhanyabudi. So in the Eastern Cape, we've listed seven major projects here where we've been providing support to various municipalities. What's interesting on this slide, if you look at the implementing agent, you can see that Amatola Water and Ungeni Water Board are implementing agents for these projects to assist the municipalities with implementation. If you look at the first one, the Noordgedacht Water Purification Plant project, was a major project which we funded from the RBIC with Amatola Water as the implementing agent, and which played a major factor in preventing Nelson Mandela Bay from going to day zero. Next slide, please. Moving to the Free State, we are providing very high levels of support to Maluti Apapong and Machabeng local municipality. You can see in the details of the project, which I won't go into, the range of things that we're assisting the municipalities with. Again, we're allocating our RBIC and WSIG grants to enable these to happen, and our Bloem Water is playing a key role as the implementing agent, working closely with the municipalities, because these, in our assessment, these municipalities were lacking the capacity to implement these large-scale improvement plans timely and effectively. Next slide, please. In Gauteng, as the Deputy Minister mentioned, we've had a major focus with Rand Water as the implementing agent to assist Empoleni Municipality to address the terrible sanitation problems in that area. It's an ongoing project. It's going to end up being many billions of Rand, but there's good progress. The major upgrades which are required for wastewater treatment works are now out on procurement by Rand Water. So the long-term solutions to their sanitation problems in Impuleni are going to be addressed through this intervention. Rand Water is working very closely with Impuleni to implement this project. Next slide, please. In KwaZulu-Natal, again, this just lists eight of our very strong support projects in KwaZulu-Natal. Again, if you look at the implementing agents, you'll see that we're mobilizing our water boards to particularly assist some of the weaker municipalities in terms of implementing these major improvement plans to their water services. Next slide, please. In Limpopo, there's some key major projects which we've been focusing on, which were similarly to our National Water Resource projects, which were delayed for many years. Some of them were also delayed due to problems with corruption, which are being investigated by the SIU. The Giani Water Project is a well-known example of that. But under Minister Mthunu's leadership again, we've managed to unblock the delays in that Kiani water project. The bulk pipeline is now being completed, and we are providing Mopani District Municipality with very strong support to upgrade the water treatment works and to put in place the reticulation so that the water which is now coming to Kiani through the bulk pipeline can now be distributed to residents of Kiani. Again, Lepeli Northern Water is assisting in that regard. But you can see on this slide that we're also supporting a range of other municipalities in Limpopo. Next slide, please. In Mpumalanga, a major project is the Lekwa local municipality, where this time we're working with Tabandi District Municipality. That support project is also working very well. It's a bit different, this one. The approach that we take depends on the local circumstances. In this particular locality, we determined that the most appropriate implementing agent would be Tabandi District Municipality because we in our view, it has sufficient capacity to be the implementing agent on behalf of Lekwa Municipality. But again, our water services branch and our regional office are very closely involved in providing a high-level support in this major Lekwa water and sanitation services intervention. Next slide. In the northwest, we have a whole province approach where the minister is engaging with the provincial leadership as well as with all the mayors and officials of municipalities in the province, which is involved identifying projects where money was just sitting because the municipalities were delaying in implementation, it was under expenditure, mobilizing those monies and reallocating them to key projects to address water supply problems in Northwest, and then with a high level of involvement of our officials, close monitoring and support to make sure that those reallocated funds are allocated to projects which would address the key issues and that the projects are implemented timelessly. Next slide, please. In the Northern Cape, we have a particularly strong intervention in Salt Pike, where there are major problems with both water and sanitation. Next slide, please. In the Western Cape, we provided a high-level support to the Drakenstein municipality where there were severe sanitation problems. We used our DWS internal construction unit to assist Drakenstein municipality to address those problems, and that has been a very successful intervention. Next slide, please. And then currently we are providing a high-level support together with RAN Water to all the municipalities in Gauteng with regular monitoring and oversight meetings with the municipalities and RAN Water to make sure that there's optimal coordination between RAN Water and the municipalities so that the water supply disruptions due to the tight supply demand situation in Gauteng for treated water are managed as effectively as possible to reduce the impact on residents. In Etabeni municipality, which has severe problems with sanitation, I mentioned earlier that we've resolved the problem of bulk water supply to Etabeni through the Umkhumazi project, but Etabeni also has severe problems with sanitation. The minister has mobilized Umgeni Water to support Etigwini Municipality, and an agreement has been reached with Etigwini and Umgeni Water that Umgeni Water will assist Etigwini Municipality with the management of 10 of its major wastewater treatment works, take some of the workload off Etigwini and enable that its water and sanitation department to put more resources into other issues. In the following slides, I'm going to talk in more detail, just as an example of the extent to which we're supporting municipalities, about our support that we're providing to the city of Tshwane with regard to addressing the water supply issues in Hammanskraal. If you go on to the next slide, please, Zuko. As we know, honourable members, there was a cholera outbreak in Hammanskraal which resulted in more than 45 deaths. That might well have been linked to the dysfunctionality of the Rooibal wastewater treatment works in Hammanskraal, which is pouring barely treated wastewater into the Arpies River, and downstream of the wastewater treatment works, the city of Tshwane's water treatment plant draws water.
Please pick up your feet and try to get to the end.
Okay.
So that you have the opportunity to engage in the presentation.
Okay, so let me take it just given that members understand the problems in the city of Tshwane and Hammanskraal. If you go to the next slide, please. The problems relate are caused by the city not prioritizing budgets for the maintenance and upgrading of the Rooibal wastewater treatment works over many years. We took a number of legal and regulatory actions, including legal action against the municipality, including a court case against the municipality to address the pollution issues from the Rooibal wastewater treatment works. Just before the cholera outbreak, the mayor of Tshwane approached our minister and suggested that he collaborate rather than engage in courts to address the issues. And as a result, as that collaboration was accelerated after the cholera outbreak and has resulted in a situation where we are working with Mahali's Water to enable Mahali's Water to provide treated water into the distribution system in Hammanskraal by March next year, so that people of Hammanskraal don't need to continue to rely on water tankering. So that just gives a taste of the extent to which we are supporting municipalities across the country. I'd now like to hand over to our Chief Director for Regulation to answer the two questions which was asked by the committee with regards to the number of municipalities whose water infrastructure is at critical risk of failure, and how municipalities are supported to avoid a recurrence of the recent cholera outbreak. Amir?
Thanks, Deputy Minister. Before we provide the context of the critical state, we just need to provide you with some background on the report that provides this evidence. And we have the three programs, Green Drop, Blue Drop, and No Drop. These certification programs provide the regulatory information that then regarding the water services, which are largely a constitutional responsibility of municipalities. This was initially started in 2008, and 2014 these had stopped, but Minister Mchunu reintroduced these in 2022 after being appointed as Minister in late 2021. We have released the Green Drop report, and as Deputy Minister Mashlobo indicated, the Blue Drop report will be released on 5 December this year. Provide an overview of the domestic water cycle, and as what DG has explained now with Rooibal and with Temba, raw water is drawn from our rivers and dams and treated in water treatment works by either the water boards or the municipalities themselves. This is then treated according to the same standards, and after the water is being used by households, they are then moved with reticulation systems and treated in our sewer system. But sometimes these treatment works are also then downstream of each other. What each report focuses on is the Green Drop focuses on our wastewater system, the Blue Drop on our drinking water system, and they look not only at the works but at the entire condition of the infrastructure, as well as the circulation systems, as well as the technical capacity of our municipalities to actually operate and maintain these treatment works. The No Drop looks at the degree in which drinking water distribution systems are treated efficiently without wasting water. The No Drop will also be released on the 1st of December. I'm not going to go into too much detail with the purpose of the report, but they provide evidence for us to be able to target our interventions as well as our regulatory actions. Next slide. Publications of the report, I will give you some detail on the watch report for Blue Drop, that's what we base our critical systems on, as well as the Green Drop report that was released These reports rotate, as I've indicated, and on the 5th of December, the full blue drop will be released. The details provided here is on the watch report, which is a sample of the documentation. All right, the green drop report found 334 out of our 850 systems to be in a critical state. These belong to 19 municipalities. This means 63% of the 144 water service authorities to be in a critical condition. In 2013, when this was last released, we had 248 out of 824 municipal systems in critical condition, which means there's a decline. And the same decline can be seen also in our drinking water system. Following the release, what did we do? We issued non-compliance notices, requesting them to submit action plans. By September of this year, we had received action plans from 189 of these systems, which means a 57% response rate. By September 2023, not only did we check if those systems had plans, but we also were implementing these plans. And unfortunately, also there has been only 84 of the 189 plans were being implemented. For those that did not implement, we have followed further administrative action, and for municipalities where we've already done that and had no results, criminal charges had been laid against municipalities. I'm going to skip slide 46, which is just an indication for a province. Slide 47, thank you. The findings, we have issued over 184 pre-directives and 94 directives for non-compliant systems. Some of these predate the release of the Green Drop report. Just to explain where the criminal enforcement comes in, if we've exhausted our administrative enforcement, it is a non-compliant thing. It is an offence to not comply to the directive. And for on basis of this plus pollution, criminal charges have been laid against 22 municipalities currently, either with dockets being with the department or with the Department of Forestry, Fisheries and Environment, as the Environmental Management Inspectorate or the Scorpion. 18 of these 22 municipalities are within the critical system. As indicated, we have a wider scope than just the critical system. We have also approached the courts for civil interdicts for 17 municipalities, of which 9 have been identified as critical in the Green Drop report. Moving to drinking water, the No Drop report, as indicated, did not do a full assessment of all the systems. The full Blue Drop report does. But for the results of this, 151 of our 135 systems were sampled, which means we looked at least one or two systems per water services authority. When we look at the infrastructure condition, 3% of the sample systems were found to be in a critical condition, 12 in poor infrastructure and 49 in average, 31 in good and 5% in an excellent infrastructural condition. Municipalities are also required to monitor the microbiological and chemical quality in the water. This is to indicate whether the water is safe or not for us to drink. And this standard is set by the South African National Standards 241 as well as the World Health Guidelines. In terms of the summary of the findings, we've got different levels of performance, and the assessment indicated that 39% of systems achieved excellent microbiological water quality, and of concern obviously is the 9% that achieved poor and the 41% that achieved bad microbiological water quality compliance. In terms of chemical quality, 15% achieved poor and 55% achieved bad chemical water quality. So what this means, in terms of the audit, we also had 11 municipalities that did not report any water quality data or any evidence that they had been testing the water quality. This is of great concern to the department. We issued non-compliance letters to them to confirm the quality of their water, and if the water did not meet the same standards, to publicize the advisory notices to the community affected in terms of the requirements of the Water Services Act. So in 2014, if you want to compare, only 5% of our municipalities had bad or poor microbiological water quality, as opposed to 50% in our sample. This indicates there's a sharp deterioration in drinking water quality since the last food drop report was done. I think that can go to the next slide. So members, in terms of stands and as well as the normal standards from DWS, municipalities are required to conduct the necessary tests to ensure that our water does not provide pose a health risk. And where they do not pass these tests, they have to publicly announce or issue advisory notices on the risk of the drinking water. Where the public can assume that water is safe, if the municipalities indicate that the water being provided is tested, they are also required in the annual reports to indicate the safety of their drinking water. So what this means also is that according to our standards, if you don't pass more than 97% of your tests, so they require very frequently to monitor their water, hourly and daily and weekly, depending on the point. If they don't meet these tests for microbiological or chemical, there is an increased risk in terms of your health, in terms of microbiology, that your water may not, may not be safe. So it was microbiologically not safe to drink the water in half of our drinking water systems during 2022, and this indicates an increased risk of life-threatening waterborne diseases such as cholera and chronic diarrhea, which are treatment methods manage, and if they don't have these tests, then that risk increases. Again, this is compared to the 2014 results, this was at 5%, there's a very sharp deterioration. The fact that 85% of our drinking water systems were in an average or better infrastructure condition indicates that non-infrastructure factors play a critical role in the quality of our water. So the blue drop also measures and indicates where do we have a requirement or a lack of skills or proper controls that the municipality then also has to address to improve performance. So it's not just an engineering infrastructure intervention that is required, it is capacity as well.
Madam? Yes. No, I thought we are coming, that's what I was saying to the DG. Can you please 5 minutes finish that?
Yeah, let's go towards the recommendations, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. There aren't any recommendations, but we're trying to address all the questions we proposed by the committee, but we'll speed up and just get the key issues. I'll help guide on it, this which fire chief can skip the speed on it, go to the next slide. Okay, and let's just give a few key points per slide.
Okay, so I think the highlights or that we need to emphasize is the interventions that the department together with COPSA and National Treasury is doing to address the worst performing municipalities. Based on the reports that were released, we were presenting also at Cabinet in June and we were requested to provide an action plan jointly with COPSA to address these. The action plan covers drinking water and wastewater systems. It addresses 30 municipalities in 7 provinces. Gauteng and KZN did not have any municipalities that scored below 10%. So this is not the critical system for 30 percenters in the report, but the worst of the worst, that's 10%. The action plans cover the findings and the recommendations in terms of infrastructure interventions as well as funding allocations, maintenance and maintenance plans that need to be introduced by municipalities as well as capacity building to address the process controllers that the municipality has to implement. The common problems and the solutions were presented to Cabinet and are provided in the following slide. In terms of common findings, the common root causes were the non-adherence to norms and standards, processes for drinking water treatment and wastewater treatment, the infrastructure is in a poor condition, mostly due to lack of maintenance, with our officials not being available to operate and maintain, municipal officials not being able to operate and maintain. Also, municipalities not appropriately budgeting for operations and maintenance and for poor billing and repair stations. terms of, like, this is just the nature of the times, we're not going to see this slide. What the next slides cover is all the common issues that we found across all these poor-performing municipalities, so it's the general problem of lack of capacity for wastewater treatment systems. The next slide, please. And then, working together with COFTA and National Treasury, we're doing a range of capacity building actions. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. Working together with Treasury, there's a range of financial actions being taken to support municipalities, which are detailed in these slides. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. So, I'm now going to go to the next section, which I'll go through rapidly, Chairperson. What all these previous slides have shown is that there's a huge degree of support provided by the Department of Municipalities. They've shown that notwithstanding all of that support, our blue and green drop reports show that despite all of that support, municipal water and sanitation services are deteriorating rapidly. And that is because there's limitations to which the support being provided can have an impact. And that is because, for example, we can't do maintenance and operation on behalf of municipalities. That constitutes a municipal function, and it has to be funded from revenue. We're not allowed to use our money to maintain and operate municipal water infrastructure. That would be classified as irregular expenditure. We only get grants, ARPIC and RITIC grants, to give to municipalities to address infrastructure backlogs. Maintenance and operation has to be funded by municipalities, and they have to fund that from revenue from the sale of water. So if municipalities are not doing billing and revenue collection properly, and also if they're not prioritizing budgets for water and sanitation, because there's no legal obligation on them to use the revenues from sale of water to fund maintenance and operation of water, if they under budget for operation and maintenance of water, then the water services deteriorate. Next slide, please. We're very worried about the financial sustainability in the sector because of weaknesses with billing and revenue collection at municipal level. The debt owed by municipalities to water boards is increasing exponentially. It was over 18 billion by October this year. And this debt owed by municipalities to water boards has already resulted in Teddy Bend Water Board going bankrupt. We had to close it, and we had to transfer the geographical areas and assets and liabilities to Mahali's Water and to Vaal Central Water Board. Those water boards' financial sustainability has been negatively affected by that, and we worry that if this trend continues, all water boards will go bankrupt. In terms of the fiscal model of the country, water boards are completely financially self-sustaining. They don't get any money from the fiscus. They have to rely entirely on revenues from the sale of water to fund their operations. If a water board goes bankrupt and is no longer able to provide treated water to an area, means that area will no longer get any treated water, which will be catastrophic. Next slide, please.
Dr. Philip?
Yes?
No. Members want to interact with the presentation, right? And that's why I specified in the letter that, please, can you have not more than 20 slides? Any other thing you've seen on Alexa? Now we're on slide number 67. And as a result, oral members are not able to interact with the presentation. Oral deputy minister, that's what our letter said, 20 slides. Well, slide number 67 now. I kept on thinking that no, we're going to happen because it's one thing to get a presentation, but I also want honorable members to have an opportunity to raise issues and questions so that it becomes a dialogue, not a monologue.
I heard you intervening, let's
cut it now because we're having another meeting after lunch, so it's going to be unfair to other members. But let me hear how do we okay, so how far are we from this?
Chairperson, I've only got two or three slides left.
Do it on one slide. Summarize one slide.
Okay.
One slide, yeah.
Okay, so the point is that despite all of this support, water and sanitation services in this post area
municipalities is deteriorating. So we've reached the conclusion that we need more fundamental reform. A week or two ago, we released the Water Services Amendment Bill, which contains those more fundamental reforms in it, which will involve introducing an operating license for water service providers, strengthen the current provisions in the Water Services Act to differentiate between water services authorities and water service providers, so that we can move to a situation where we have more efficient and professional water service providers that can provide water to the required standards. Next slide, please. Next slide. The role for some slides, we also put some slides in about the liquidity challenges of the water boards, but I think I've covered this with the fact that we're very worried about the financial sustainability of the water board because of the problem of municipal debt for water boards. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you to Dr. Phillips and the team. Thanks, CM. Our members, let me get quickly. Our members would like to ask questions or make observations. Our members?
Mlenzana.
Mlenzana.
I'm from Memezi.
From Memezi.
Kaito,
Honorable Kaito. Look how far we go. Okay. I'll see the fourth one. Honorable Lizana, please come in.
Thanks, Chairperson, and let me also greet the minister and the team. Colleagues, let's start by welcoming the presentation. Yeah, it's quite packed, let me say. The presentation is quite packed. This presentation will assist us going forward because what you've actually done, you have actually taken us through almost all that is within the department in terms of your working. However, it has been, or let me say, the report overall is more on the goodies, is more on the goodies than the challenge, and there would be motivation for a relook into privatization if there was any justification of areas where there wasn't good up to standard. Then it is a good. It is a good report. Now, one would be eager. If the English Kuluma Ngetage Mbanazika, I would say there's more meat on top of Umbush. We are all Umbush. And we don't know what is actually if we could be told what is the myth in terms of challenge. Thanks for that.
Honorable Lindana, thank you very much. Honorable Mezi?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me join Honorable Lindana for appreciating the presentation and the Deputy Minister. Thank you very much. Indeed, it is enlightening. Indeed, maybe supporting what Honorable Mlenzana is saying, that the presentation does make us happy, but knowing the experiences of our people throughout South Africa, It means there's still a lot of problems. I would say, starting from, because a lot was made of the importance of preserving water for the future difficult years. But when you go through our informal settlement, you see a lot of, even in formal townships, a lot of water losses through leakages, which is, and it's leakages of both water and sanitation, which is a bit ugly. In the, this is only in the informal settlement and the townships. So you never experience that in the suburbs, which means we still in old South Africa sometimes. That is a worry which I don't know how will they assist, because it says to me the results of closer relations and monitoring with the municipalities should be seen through then these you know, the cooperation must result in us not witnessing these experiences. You know, we still have problems in areas such as Hammerskraal in Tswane. I'm happy they touch on them, but these problems are forever embarrassing us, where you have people of South Africa, people of Hammerskraal and neighboring areas going through days, going through weeks without water. And so those are the worrying points that in spite of the good presentation, but our experiences on the ground are really not helping. People in Hammerskraal won't be happy at all. Of course, I'm a rural boy. I'm from a rural area in Lusikisiki. The rural people don't know of this pipe water. They still fresh water with animals in the river. So there should be plans, because these are people of South Africa. We can't have South Africa that is based on the old South Africa, only in the urban areas, but the rural areas, it's only a few areas. So we must move on, Deputy Minister and your team. The Vaal River situation is forever embarrassing us, but the presentation was promising, but indeed we would be happy that it is attended. There should be a closer working relation with the municipalities in this area. Working relations would make the department to be seen good, because there's no area called the Department of Water and Sanitation. But we all see your work, Deputy Minister, and your department, through our land, through the municipalities. So when water, the Vaal River is full of feces, human feces, then we look at the department, we look at municipality as well. So, Chairperson, I think those are my areas of concern. I think they, I would want to hear the how do I get convinced along those areas of my concern. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Memezi, Honorable Kaito. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you, Honorable Deputy Minister Pangazita, and your team for this presentation, and really well-informed presentation for this committee. Chair, I think we were, had we not, I think we, as a committee, because there's a number of tasks or work that has been done by the department and a significant number of projects with huge amounts of money that has been deployed for resources to ensure that the services were when it comes to water and sanitation, which really warranted that decision that we needed to do some, you know, physical oversight to the area, which has been mentioned here. So it's quite interesting report, which really would warrant that the seventh parliament must go on to do oversight on this quite interesting report, which we have received, which in some number of areas we have seen a very progressive type of, you know, approach towards the challenges that are confronting the issue of water and sanitation in the country, especially with regard to a number of areas of projects which are underway as we speak. But then, Chair, I also want to get to this point with regards to a number of, you know, municipal grants that infrastructure upgrades and maintenance, which have been given to municipalities. But we have a for instance, in slide 9, in Gauteng alone, if I'm not mistaken, close to 25% of water leakage. So I just want to know what is actually taking place there. But, I mean, what is the problem there? Because the municipalities, if they are receiving this grant to deal with issues such as water leakage, there should be a challenge of leakage at the local municipality level. Maybe if the department can also highlight what is this specific challenge, you know. Because I mean, there was a need that the land now, which the municipalities is able to utilize, is either there's a problem or challenge of capacity, but of which I want to believe there's now cooperation between these two departments. Now, I have seen the report outlining, like I've said, specific areas where there are challenges prioritized in terms of, you know, dealing with the issues of sanitation in specific areas, towns and cities. But I want to check on this one of Marquardt and Fitzgerald, because Marquardt, you know, when you go to Marquardt, people there will tell, we did not have water for the past 10, 13 years. So since the collapse of that dam, I think it was in around 2018 or 2019, that dam in Marquardt has since collapsed. So I just want to check whether the department taken any initiative also, because I don't see Marquardt dam yet, unless maybe I'm late with the history or report, but I don't see Marquardt dam there being prioritized as well. I remember about the Sixpack River spillage there, which at that time the minister was saying that he has sent people to go look at what is happening in that spillage river there so that it should be given attention. I'm not sure whether how is that the progress around there. So now, given that history, I also want to know what is the breakdown of understanding of these municipalities, in as far as these provinces are concerned when it comes to, you know, utilization of water infrastructure grants, you know, per province, so that we have some a clear picture actually what is shaping there. Yes, we talk about reprioritization, but we also want to get what does the breakdown tells us in as far as understanding that particular grant. The other question that I want to go in is on the budget eradication in the Free State. I'm not sure whether are we going to end up saying now a moving target, or do we specifically have a particular timeline around this, and what, how far is that timeline? It's one area that we have mentioned quite, you know, on several times. Now, there's on slide 65, there's an area of concern of that the slide raised, or the report raised around the water board collapsing, and there's a 18.8 billion rand owed to municipalities. How is the department, or how are these municipalities going to be assisted? Because as the report ends there, it says it has now become a huge problem, which the department is looking forward as to what is it, what can it be done to rescue those water boards. Because the challenge is that if those water boards facing that upswing graph that has pointed in the slide going on in that particular fashion, it means we are facing huge problems in as far as water management in future. So I just want to know from the department whether is there any mechanism that seek to intervene in that particular situation. And what is the name of that board? I'm not sure, because it's just that one board has collapsed. We're not sure which board is that. And the last one is, I just want to check with the department, because I want to believe we have collaboration with also the Department of COCTA or Human Settlement. In my constituency, there's a huge abandoned sewage plant, of which we try to get to the local authority as to municipality. What is happening around that huge plant, a sewage plant which has been abandoned? And to our disappointment, we have not even received any kind of, you know, response as to what is happening around that sewage plant which has been abandoned, and then to get to know. So perhaps the department is able to fast track or to check on that. We could be very glad to know about that, because basically the issue of the challenge of water in future, it doesn't only affect people just generally, but it also affects our society in terms of, you know, gender equality. Because you find that most of the people who are being affected when there's a problem with water are women who are unemployed, because they then in the rural areas take some time where there's no water to go and fetch water, and unpaid. So I'm just highlighting the other part of the story of the issue of water and sanitation. What effects are there when there are these challenges? But over and above that, want to appreciate the progress in these other areas that the report has highlighted, that the department is earnestly looking at them and putting up efforts to resolve them. So we really appreciate the response. And actually, situation of reprioritization, obviously it would affect all the progress that we tried to we're looking forward for them to be resolved. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Taito. Let me come in. Is there another honorable member? One to the side. No. Okay, let me come in. Let me start by thanking the Honorable Deputy Minister, Anasita, the DG, Dr. Phillips, and the team for the presentation, and the issues that have been raised. Very clear that of course a big project and program in water and sanitation, which are meant to improve the lives of our people. So the honourable members have asked a number of questions. Mine, honourable DM, we speak about cuts, and we know very well where that comes from. The under collection by SARS of revenue emanating from the economy, which is not growing at the rate that is desired. And then we said that the solution to this thing is to implement the RRP. But my question, I just want to check that as the department, are there any, apart from what you are doing, any programs to try and encourage localization so that we don't import the thing? For instance, I can imagine the number of pipes that we are that are going to be used and the accessories thereof that are going to be used in this construction. I'm sure cement also comes in and many other things. How are we using these projects to try and get those things produced in the country, localization? Mostly, you find that in these big projects, you end up importing. As you know that importing things result in negative impact on the economy. But even more worrying for us is that that's tantamount to exporting jobs and exporting revenue to those countries that we import from. So I'm interested in the concrete things that are, for instance, where we say, we're trying to help the cement industry to make sure that they don't import a lot of cement from other countries. There's cement here, making an example, but something which is specific to the question of pipes and so on. And please throw into that the question of economic transformation, deracialization of the economy. DM, I'll back to you.
No, thank you very much, Shenya, and to all the honorable members. I'll just respond to some high-level issues that DG will have, some of the issues with the team. And just to thank the leadership, Honorable Lendwane, and I know that things went well in Durban. You did well there. Congratulations to your team. What we are trying to do, our report does not try to give an impression that everything is good. But our report, both certified by the report of Census 2022 and our own report, indicate that in the last close to 8 years, we have made strides to ensure that access to water, to those who are denied water on the basis of the color of their skin, for the first time they have access to water, including access to benefits like environmental, cultural, and social aspects of water they are being attended to. But we must admit, Chairperson Shen, that our ANC government does not deny that there are those that still have been left out. And these are the people that are a priority, especially the most vulnerable in rural communities, including in farms. Recently, we were to submit a policy framework around how citizens in privately owned land, they must never be denied their right to access to water, including the benefits. Honorable Lembezan and Honorable Mezel Kaiso, all of us must admit, despite our achievements, there have been setbacks. One of the setbacks is that many people, they do have access to water infrastructure in their homes. But sometimes the taps are running dry for a number of days or number of weeks. And in the main, these challenges are based that the infrastructure is either is old, and there are many leaks, like the one that Honorable members were referring to. Many municipalities, their infrastructure has been old, and we've just neglected the issues of O&M. Hence, the number of decisions that have been made that a certain percentage of money must be used on O&M. But at the very same time, municipalities, they can only get money through water sales, and they don't invest that money back into water. You know, they take that money, they spend it on other items, other than taking the certain percentage, because their most of their income is water and electricity. Hence, in certain communities, you could say the availability of water in terms of reliability. There are certain municipalities where the access to infrastructure sharing is at 90% plus. But when it comes to availability, it has dropped down to around 60 to 70%. And these are the issues that we are actually talking about. Honorable members, you are very correct, because he experienced the abandon in certain communities. They don't have water, and for a number of days. That's why the DG and the team is able to say, we're assisting the Bomaspas. One of the problems with these municipalities, they can't get this money if they can't plan. You know, our department spend more time in assessing them how to put business plans, technical report, implementation readiness studies. The department has unlocked that in a number of municipalities that they couldn't. Then there was issues of implementation capacity. In the implementation capacity, many of these municipalities don't implement this project. They don't have capacity. Hence, the minister and ourselves, we've put these water boards in with their vast capacity and experience. Some of these water boards, like Rainwater, is more than 120 years. And is registered in the stock exchange, is one of the biggest in the Southern Hemisphere with Umgate. And we put them there to help these municipalities. Initially, there was a resistance that these water boards must be able to help. But there is a positive attitude by local government to accept our help, including other implementing agencies that we're bringing, including the issues of even bringing business on board. Therefore, we do agree that we still have to do more for those other communities, but our support, in as much as the responsibility lies with local government, but we have taken a decision and an attitude. Nobody must be left behind. And you could see a number of projects that are done through our own grants, but if there are those special interventions that our ministry, we are doing all over the provinces to support them. The issues of water leaks, or the issues of not having water, apart from the old infrastructure, there is an issue of load shedding. Load shedding has an impact on the entire system now. And some of these municipalities, they never built their infrastructure so that at least there is an alternative supply of energy. That's why even the DG and the team, they always engage with ESCOM to support so that certain critical infrastructure is exempted on load shedding. But when you look at the problem in Joburg, now ESCOM has given them the right to manage their own load shedding. Sometimes they don't shed themselves for a longer period. And if the water system is just loaded for 2 hours, it takes time for that particular system to do the recharging. Then there's an issue of climate change. It's no longer a myth, it's a reality. Yesterday, with Minister, we were down in Arsis, because we are dealing with the challenges. We're just celebrating 100 years. The structure is intact. It contributes to the economy in many ways. The issues of recreation, the sports that are there, including domestic and agricultural use, and then the problem of hygiene. The temperature change in the day in water, imagine, it was 39.5 degrees. So hot, so hot. Then you have this thunderstorm that are there. and the consumption levels of our people, they increase. That's why they call by the DG that we must try to use water sparingly and stop the unwise water uses that we do, the watering of our gardens, the washing of our cars, hose pipes, and so forth. But these are the things that these municipalities, most of them, they were struggling. But the situation in Gauteng is stabilizing, and we know that there are still communities that have problems. Then there's this intermittent supply of informal settlements. And most of these municipalities, they do provide water with tendering. But it's not our preferred option. We must indicate it's not our preferred option because the system can be exploited, share. And some of these people, sometimes they're employed by water services authorities. They vandalize infrastructure. And there's no monitoring and accountability where they monitor that the water tanker, it has a number plate, they have the name of the driver. The drivers are not asking for sexual favors and abusing women on the basis of this. But they're also monitoring that in the room. In some aspects in Swane, you'll find that there are 10 trucks, but only two are on the road. And then the others that are claiming without some of those issues. These are some of the challenges we face. Honorable members, the issue of Amaskrali, it was one of the inhumane conditions our people were exposed to. Ultimately, even under Chapter 9, constitutional institution like Chapter 9, you had the public protector has produced a very damning report, and you also have the South African Human Rights Commission. They have worked with us as a ministry, the department. They have an action plan on how to support them. There was a resistance in the past, but the current administration has decided to say, no, we can't do the work. Let the department come in. Let the DG present it. We are in that particular space. And our promise is that these people of Amaskral, they too, we can say, Liruna River, they too are people, and they will not be left behind. That's why our ministry, supported by DG and the CFO, an additional of more than 240 million has been put aside just to support it through the implementing agency to deal with those issues. But we're not only doing that. You will know, your Honorable Comrade Mazi, Minister assigned me and Comrade Nail and the MEC in Gauteng. We dealt with the situation of managing the situation politically there on the ground around the village. And Rainwater has done a very remarkable work to try to revive and refurbish infrastructure. We are very pleased that a number of effluent that was going into the field and into the river now is starting to come back into the system. It's being treated, but there are also other wastewater systems there that the department is attending to. That's why we are pleased now with the innovation that municipalities that are like Mkuleni, that were just down and out in terms of liquidity, they are now working with our water board as part of this issue of bringing private sector state-owned companies to just to work together. And you could see there is a relief. One relief has happened is also in Mpumalanga, where we come from. You know, Standard Tonsheng, they build the most beautiful human settlement. And then they decided these people not to put bulk infrastructure. The sewer was coming back into people's homes. We intervened because remember that municipality was by the court directive. The Minister of Finance became a mayor in as much as there's a mayor. We removed the sewer in the streets there. And the communities, they could see this intervention. Now they are demanding that we clean up issues of water. And it's happening everywhere. You go to Adelphia and take me. Etewin, remember what the floods they did. The floods in the Marshalls, they did the biggest damage on the sewer systems there. But the systems, the infrastructure was old, and the number of these other issues on building in the flood line. Then the issue of Umgeni going to be taking about 10 of their major plants that are going to be supplying close to 2,000 plants so that we can be able to manage that Ethekwini remain the destination of our choice. If you could see that in the issues of sewer, we have made it our determination that our people, they can't be exposed to those inhumane conditions. We are helping in a lot of other areas where these municipalities are not doing well. That's why the team was saying that when they speak about the green drop, most of the wastewater treatment systems are not in good condition. There is a corresponding plan to support them. The issue of the valve system, now that there is an improvement on the ground, our work is not complete. We'll have to start to look at the rehabilitation of the dam because it's one of the most important systems, highly polluted. And we did ask Rainwater and other academics to look at the matter. Like the very same thing we've done with the previous for the most beautiful dam. And you find sewer that is coming from these municipalities in Kauke, nearly about 400 million liters a day that get to be deposited into the RC system, contaminating the system, but also causing problems for the downstream users, including the issues of treatment. I think the issues of the leaks and others, we have dealt them well, but the team will give you the numbers, Honorable Kaiso, my leader, around certain of these issues. Kavanchu, Mama Home is still my constituency leader. Mama Home, you could see when Minister Mubai was presenting, remember the metro leadership anomaly funded by the urban settlement development grant. And when they were presenting some of those issues, I remember the wastewater plant they are talking about. It's abandoned. It is not complete. I visited it. And it shows sewer into the river leadership and even into the fence. Unacceptable conditions. I know Dr. Ndidi is here, probably under the leadership of our DG. He will be able to say, what are they doing? But these are the things that we are saying we must be doing. You know, in Free State right now, we are helping in Machabeng, Honorable Chair. You know, a small municipality like Machabeng, owing us close to 5 billion rand, and owing Eskom a lot of billions. And we have came in at a risk. The mayor very wanting to be helped. We have placed the Val Central Water Board in them. They are helping them so that all those areas that are there and those communities. I've even went to on behalf of the minister to meet with communities there on the ground to speak about our plans. But we are actually doing well. The last point I will speak about, and then the DD can conclude the other issues. Sene, we are correct. Water is one of the most important aspects in terms of water infrastructure in the economic reconstruction and recovery plan as part of the network industry. We are absolutely correct that the country must use this infrastructure investment and development to promote manufacturing at the first instance. Because there are opportunities for manufacturing in terms of the input. In our built environment, steel is one of the biggest things. And our country has been exporting those raw materials, and then they go out, they come back, and the steel prices are very high. And then there's issues of the piping, the issues of the pumps, the issues of the cement. And they can give us leverage. I was even, there was a time when there was COVID. You know, one of the things that we spend a lot of money is just the chemical storage just to treat the plant, where many of these products are actually import products. And it does have an opportunity. But this has been introducing a lot of initiatives. The partnership office around funding is one of the things that we've looked at. The issues of independent water producer as an example for desalination, a very expensive technology, but an important technology. These are some of the things that we are looking at so that we can galvanize our investment in water, but it can be able to expand more. The last issue I thought is the issue of, you know, our story should be told, that our delivery of water and sanitation in our country is unmatched and unparalleled, in as much as we agree that there are still those that we must reach. The South Africans, for the first time, women, they don't have to walk those long distances. In the launch of government 15 days of no violence against women and children, water was one of the main things. Women can't go those long distances to fetch water. Now they get water in the test. But they ask you some women that are there. But the exposure of women just to unpaid work, the exposure to the possibility of gender-based violence, issues of race, it's no longer happening. The issues of the girl child, instead of taking time to go to school and do other activities and play like other children, and that burden has been taken away, let alone the burden of diseases around waterborne diseases. Therefore, our conviction to reach out to all South Africans, we must not waver, because it's the right thing to do, and we're not doing any favor to the citizens by providing water. We'll provide them with water. Where there are mistakes along the way, we'll correct them. But we can assure we are a responsive ministry, and local government, they will have our support and in dealing with some of the difficult issues. I'll ask PG to wrap up the remaining issues I've not dealt with in the China. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. I'd like to give a few responses and then ask a couple of colleagues to add a couple more responses. There was a question about the use of grants for leakages. The grants that we get as conditions attached to them, the Regional Bulk Infrastructure Grant and the Water Services Infrastructure Grant, they're intended to be capital grants to municipalities, to assist municipalities with addressing backlogs in water and sanitation infrastructure. They're not intended for maintenance. Municipalities, in terms of the fiscal system, municipalities are supposed to fund maintenance of the infrastructure from their own revenues. National Treasury has relaxed those conditions a little bit in terms of allowing the grants also to be used for rehabilitation. So municipalities are able to apply to these grants for doing things like rehabilitation of aging pipes and replacing them with pipes. Municipalities, in consultation with us, they have to prioritize what they want to ask for funding for from these grants. And we don't have enough money in the grants to meet all the needs. So there's a huge need for replacement of pipes, for example, which are leaking underground. But there are other needs as well, which are often prioritized by municipalities for applications for the grants. Perhaps a point to make there is that there should be, there are opportunities for mobilizing private sector finance to replace aging and leaking pipes underground. Our Water Partnerships Office is trying to assist municipalities to put in place public-private partnerships, because you could get the private sector to invest in replacing the pipes, and they can get a return on the investment from the savings of the municipality through reducing the amount of leaks.
Did you?
Yes.
Right, did you?
Yes.
Please wrap up in 10 minutes with all your other colleagues.
Okay. There was a question about how we reduced the municipal debt to water boards and which water board went bankrupt. As I indicated in the presentation, the Steady Bank Water Board went bankrupt and we had to close it down. The measures that we're taking to reduce the municipal debt to the water boards is through standardizing credit control measures across all the water boards. National Treasury is also providing a lot of support to municipalities to improve their billing and revenue collection. Our amendments to the Water Services Act will also result in more efficient management of billing and revenue collection by municipalities. Just to add on the issue of localization, we have started a process with National Treasury's Chief Procurement Officer and the DTI to put in place a transversal tender for chlorine against which municipalities will be able to place orders, which will provide an incentive for increased investment in local production of chlorine, because at the moment there are only two companies locally who produce chlorine. Franz, would you like to add to answer the question on the breakdown of the underspending for province, please?
Thank you very much, EG. Yeah, currently, as of the 28th of November, I'll talk to the overall spending on the RP grants, both our direct and indirect grants, we are at 67%, and as indicated earlier on, we are on the right path to spend the remaining budget. And on water services infrastructure grants as of today as well, overall we are at 68%, including both continental allocation to local government and our indirect allocations. And we are also having acceleration plans to make sure that the remaining budget spent by the end of the financial year.
Thank you, Franz. Scott and Kelly, would you like to answer on the specific questions related to free state?
Thank you very much, DG and Chair. In respect to the Marquardt Dam, Marquardt Dam is a municipality dam which is really managed by Sesotho Municipality. Currently, the business plan has been approved and the project cost is about 9 million. And consultant has been appointed and we are really working with the municipality to make sure that that dam is really being rehabilitated and to be refurbished, especially for their maintenance. Two, in terms of Kabantu wastewater treatment work, it is fully under Mangaung Metro. The wastewater treatment work, this project started almost 2 years ago, but this year in June, the contractor left, and the municipality has also had the recovery plan, which is going to make the contractor to be appointed by January and so on. It is really funded under USDG, and the department is really regulating and putting the notices to the municipality in terms of the quality of the provisioning of the services. Thank you very much, DG. Thank you.
And then finally, committee is going to come in on the, to answer the question on budget.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chairperson. Regarding budget orientation, so the question is about timelines or is it a moving target or not? Firstly, it's not a moving target. We do have an end date proposed. But as you would know, that this project came through human settlement. We initially had about 14,000 buses in Free State and Northern Cape. Currently, we have eradicated about 12,000. There's about 1,400 remaining. And on that 1,400, we are now doing about 600 in Campbell. So that means by March next year, we'll be having a backlog of about 800 buses. So, and in terms of Free State, the progress is moving well. We intending to close Free State by the end of this year. We are at about 60% in terms of pump stations that are left. We do have challenges, which is SMMEs and all that, and obviously Free State is a flat area, so we have deep excavations there, which are delaying the progress. But otherwise, in terms of timelines and expenditure, we are on track. And I think with that, I'm ready.
Thank you very much,
Senator.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Shane, on our side, we appreciate where we hand over back to you, Goke.
Honorable DM, DG, DDG, and the whole department personnel on the platform, thank you very much. There's quite good information for us to read. we appreciate you have been here. One thing another time for me, I think as a committee we are clear on that the intervention of the special department in the provinces and municipalities it's there, it's palpable. You can see it. On that that cost, because it has at the end of the day we may have bulk water, but if there's no water in the tap, people don't understand exactly now who is. They just say the government is not giving us water. That's what we are saying. So in terms of cooperative governance and so on, let's make this thing here. But I've spoken about the intervention of the department water and sanitation, when we interact with other national departments, that we should be learning from each other, that we are intervention to make sure that at the end of the day, the service delivery of whatever public good that we want to deliver to our people. So with those words, thank you very much. Thank you for engagement. And all of the best. We'll keep on looking at you as to
how ilisi ukuthi sivakashela mithi imkhandlu ngelinye ilanga nani manikhona ningamalungu esishayamthetho niyowubona lo msebenzi ukuze nisibonise kahle but nje will make that undertaking to share because your committee has always been very supportive around our members. Thank you.
Much appreciated. Or remember my sincere apologies for having kept you along in this meeting. I know that too not to beg for engagement with the Department of Health. But it was not time lost. We understand the department better now. Thank you very much. Won't deal with other matters on the agenda. I want us to adjourn. Let's meet at 2 o'clock for another meeting. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, all our leaders. Thank you.
Thank you.
If we in a sun cushion.
And
so progressive, very good. My task is complete.
When I will be
Thank you.